Jay's in the back. Without further ado, we should get him in the mix.
Let's do it.
All right, Jay, welcome to the stage.
How we doing, boys?
Jay Anderson, everybody. How you doing,
man? Hey, what's up, Jay? How's it going, bro?
I'm good, man. You know, I might be looking a little bit red, but that's because English people don't really know how to respect the sun when it's early. And it's been, like, so good today. So I've basically just been roasting like a rotisserie chicken. Uh-huh. So I probably look a little bit glowy.
Live it up.
Live yeah, it dude. Up. Yeah. No, it's good to be here with you guys. It's like you said, it's long overdue, YouTubes.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I noticed recently you went outside and filmed a video, and it was the same location as your first video.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, man? Like I said, like it's a rare thing that the sun comes out, but it's been really nice. And I was kind of like going for a little walk, and I was near the area where I'd actually gone when I initially started making videos. So I thought I'll go back up and I'll do a video, kind of like a recap and a reflection on where I've, you know, been over the last 5 years doing everything I'm doing. And it was good. People seemed to really enjoy it. And it kind of made me think, oh, I should probably do that a bit more, at least while the sun's shining. So I was actually on a walk the other day, like recording something that I'm going to put out, which is just my thoughts on kind of the Stoned Ape theory and how that kind of maybe led towards civilization and shamanism and mysticism in a more complex way. So yeah, I'm kind of enjoying these little walk and talks, and people seem to like it. So
no, it's awesome.
I remember those early Unity, walking in the woods with the iPhone, right?
Yeah, man. Like literally just, basically the goal was to find somewhere as far away from people as I could so that I could just kind of talk about this really bizarre stuff, like having these encounters with these orbs and not feel awkward about it. At this point, my neighbors have heard so many interviews. They don't care. Like I'm cool with it at this point. But yeah, like near the beginning, I wanted to kind of find a place to like safely talk about it without worrying. And yeah, that was the beginning of it all. That was the, you know, and as you guys were saying, I've been lucky. I've managed to secure a lot of interviews over this time and things have evolved and changed. So it was quite nice to reflect back and kind of get back to the roots of it.
Nice, man. What prompted you to start Project Unity?
I had experiences, man. Like it's a long story in terms of like how I ended up in my back garden getting into meditative states of consciousness and projecting these intentions, what people know as like CE5 or HICE, human initiated contact and things like that. But you know, it ultimately that was the main driver when I was introduced to these concepts. It was at a particular time in my life where admittedly probably not where I'm at now. So if it was introduced to me now, I don't even think I'd have my experiences, if I'm being perfectly honest. But like, yeah, at that time, everything clicked into place so perfectly and so specifically, which is something that I want to talk about when I'm out in Cali soon, which I'm looking forward to seeing you, Red. You're going to be back out there.
Heck yeah.
Our synchronicity and how synchronicity plays a really important role in the phenomena in a way that's really quite hard to understand because it begs the question of like, how much influence does this thing have over your life? But when things click into place over the course of years, that's kind of what happened to me. And then someone introduced the concept. Well, not just someone, my best friend. So it was like an important person in my life that was introducing me to the Stephen Greer documentary. And this is before I, you know, had anything to do with UFOs. I had no previous knowledge or any prior real interest, maybe read a book or two in the library as a kid, but it wasn't in my sphere of interest. And so he was just like, hey, check this documentary out. You know, we'll sit back and crack a beer and watch this documentary. So we did that. But the thing is, prior to watching it, like a week prior to that, talking about the synchronicities, I'd been in a bit of a low because I felt like I'd been researching a lot of, you know, ideas and kind of coming to a lot of conclusions, at least at that point, spiritually about consciousness, also looking at, you know, the philosophy and quantum mechanics and more science-based side of things. And I'd been collating a lot of information and researching for a few years, and it led to me actually being quite depressed because I just felt like there was a lot of kind of lofty information, none of it was actually benefiting my life directly. It was all just kind of like philosophical, like, oh well, this might be what the afterlife is, and you know, thinking deeply on concepts, which is great, but it can lead you down a spiral. And that's kind of where it led me to begin with. So I was sitting on my bed this one time and I was literally just asking the universe, like, hey, all of these things I've been learning, this idea of non-locality, the responsivity of, you know, the universe, the conscious structure of it, all of these ideas, I need real evidence of it. Like, give me something real that I can work with, that I can see, that I can do. Just give me something that's provable, like demonstrable. And then a week later, my friend's like, you got to watch this documentary. So we watch it. And obviously at the end of that, after you've listened to like the missile launch officers and all these guys, Greer is there introducing the concept of CE5. Now, like I said, if that happened now, probably a different reaction, but because of this crazy little like kind of click, 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 click journey, asking for something, and then the universe basically like putting this guy in front of me that was like, hey, you can use your mind and you can project intentions and these things will turn up and validate that experience. And so for me, it was like a light bulb. It was like a direct answer to that previous week on the bed saying, give me something that I can do. So I started going into my back garden in times like this when it's warm and sunny in the summer of 2019.
And while you talk about this, I'm going to pull up your video. I'm just going to turn off the music, but it's your experience video while you talk about it, right? So
awesome. Yeah, by the way, this isn't my footage for anyone watching. This is Linda A. Roja is I think her name, but it's so similar to what I saw that I had to clip it and put it into my talk because I wasn't able to get footage. I was honestly too shocked by what I witnessed, but this is bang on, the way that they move, the way that they interact with each other. I honestly think this is one of the best videos of orbs, only because I've seen something that behaves so similar. I don't think those are drones. I think those are the real thing. But yeah, I started getting into these, you know, meditative states. I'm not a meditative practitioner, not a guru, not a new age kind of guy in that sense, but I just started getting into these basic meditative states. And because I think I was just resonating at the right state of mind, like kind of like a bit of a religious zealot. I said that recently in my talk. At that time, I was just like, this is the answer. This is the way I'm going to go out. I'm going to do this. And I got results, man. Got results. Started getting flashes of light in the sky, abnormal behaviors, you know, large influxes of things that look like satellites, but weren't really behaving like satellites, and like lots of flashing lights, just things I'd not seen in the sky before. And then eventually in August of 2019, I had my experiences with these orange orbs of light, which I had four experiences with within the course of about a month in my back garden, each one of them, and including one time where these orange orbs flew across the sky, three of them, stopped on a dime and started to descend down towards my house. And as they were coming down, these things were kind of weaving around each other in this very hypnotic, strange, almost like fireflies motion. And they froze about 3 feet above the roof of my house. They were these kind of light pastel orange color orbs about the size of basketballs, slightly transparent, like almost ghost-like, very visible, but kind of like slightly transparent. And something that I don't think I noticed at the time, but on reflection, even though these things were orbs of light and people have described all sorts of different orbs of light, these didn't actually spill onto the environment. There was no reflection onto the surface, even though they were just above the roof of my house. Now, if you think this is a literal ball of light, you would imagine like a significant amount of glow around the roof, but there was none of that. So it's like a self-contained light. And so that's led me down different avenues of looking at these types of things and going, well, you know, the Buddhists might call that a tulpa, a psychic projection. You know, I was in the right state of mind to almost coax what they call virtual photons, like, you know, this almost simulated photonic exchange that only you could maybe see. But then, of course, you do capture these things on camera. So I really don't know. My whole point with like ufology in general is that based on my experiences, I have no idea what's going on. All I know is there is something. There is something, and it seems to be responsive to consciousness. And that's about it. I draw the line. I don't have, you know, secret information on the alien gray agenda or the Galactic Federation. I just know that there is something that responds to human consciousness. And most importantly, before I shut up, is that it seems to be very responsive to very high states of human consciousness, love, peace, connectivity, these states that we cherish and are the most valuable to us as a species. They seem to coax these things out of existence. And that really makes me question what's actually going on.
It almost seems a little bit like related to the observer effect, right? Where once you're consciously observing it and that allows you to visually see it, maybe it's always there. You know, do you think these things are natural?
I don't know. I mean, there's an argument for that, like kind of like almost like a piezoelectric plasma phenomena. I mean, this whole electric universe, plasma universe model that's put out there and is like, you know, severely critiqued by academics in kind of like the mainstream physics arena, but a lot of people, including Salvatore Pais and a few of the other kind of like outlier scientists, really entertain the idea of a plasma model. And if there is, like, you know, maybe some form of self-organized intelligent plasma, that could potentially explain these orb phenomena. But again, like, I kind of keep all the options on the table. I mean, I'm not completely against the idea that this is like terrifyingly advanced black budget technology, but that's like right at the end of what I want it to be. And like, I, it seems pretty wild for them to be able to kind of almost pick up on conscious signals and send probes to check them out. So if they can do that, that's really scary. I genuinely, because of the synchronistic, like I said, this kind of click, 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 different things happening that you then reflect back on once you've had an experience, you know, you start going, oh man, last year and that thing that happened then and this thing that happened then, my God, it's all led to this. I don't know how a black budget group could do that. That's why I feel like it's more intrinsic, more fundamental, maybe, you know, more spiritual, something that's almost like a learning process for certain people. Because I think that, you know, quote unquote enlightenment, whatever you really want to look at that as, or just like growing as a person, growing spiritually, growing as a human, that comes in all different shapes and forms, right? There's not just like one set pathway for everyone. And it's kind of like the guy that I was interviewing recently, Ben Davidson from Suspicious Observers. Like he spends his time looking at solar flares and the geomagnetic field and all of that. And somehow, even through that, he's found like a spiritual sense of like an awakening and kind of this like drive to wake people up. And
so it's like a drive for truth.
Yeah. And it opens up all these different avenues. So for me, it was like, you know, orange orbs of light. And that drew me into the UFO community. And that made me do what I'm doing now. But that doesn't mean that it's like kind of the only way to kind of find truth or find some sort of incredible other that exists with us. It's just one mode that I happen to fall into, you know?
No, I totally get it.
Oh, go ahead, Red.
No, I think Tuba's right. Like, I think a lot of people in our community, we all just are really curious about what reality is, you know what I mean? And then just the UFO thing is just kind of like one subset of it. And that's why, like, when you get into this, usually people get into other stuff too, like ancient history, right? And all this other stuff, because it's that core.
Yeah, that's a big one for me. I love that.
Yeah, and I want to get into your Egypt trip a little bit later too.
Yeah.
But yeah, these red orbs, I feel like we hear a lot about red orbs. Like, Shane has red orb story, right, Tuba?
I mean, there's tons of them. What is it? John Ramirez spoke of the 400 nano range. What I was almost called nanobite or whatever, but the wavelength of the color, like orange, red, that's what these things are showing up in when they turn the satellites around in space and they saw a lot of these orbs coming in. I thought it was very fascinating. And to that, Jay, are you familiar with the work of Dr. Anthony Peratt? He's a plasma physicist.
No, I don't think so.
Well, he like did all, I'll bring up a graphic in a second, but he basically, plasma physicist, he was coming up with these plasma formations in the lab that were forming around, you know, basic geometric structures or whatever. And he went out in the field and was just hiking or something. And he found petroglyphs that matched what he was making in his lab. Right. And so he realized that these petroglyphs are all over, right? The spinning wheel, and this weird kind of man-like figure, right? Where it looks like a stick figure guy with two dots on the side, and then it appears everywhere. Well, it was specifically a formation he's seen a lot in the lab. So we came to this conclusion that perhaps there was a lot more activity of plasma in the atmosphere, you know, at certain points in history, which goes again with like the suspicious observer idea that there were these coronal mass ejections and these very hyper active moments or periods of the sun activity where we were being bombarded, right, with solar flare after solar flare that was forcing people underground and destroying civilization as we knew it.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear that at least that there was a strong incentive for subterranean complexes of extremely vast proportions. So, I mean, like, you know, you have to ask the question why. They're all over the world. They all date to around the same kind of periods, like pre-BC. And so you do have to wonder about that. I think that it's probably likely that they were trying to escape from some sort of solar events. I mean, look at the places in Turkey where you've just got these incredibly vast subterranean complexes that are like city levels of, you know, holding a population. And I think that, you know, like, I don't know if we're going to have some sort of crazy events in 2030, 2040. I really kind of hope Ben's wrong. Never wanted a guest to be more wrong in my life. But who knows, man? Like, you know, a lot of people get this strong sense of an awakening or a transformation. Some people look at that as an apocalypse. Maybe it depends on the lens you look at it through. I really don't know.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. It's like, I don't want all this Bledsoe prophecy stuff to be true.
Right, right. Yeah,
but exactly. It seems like a lot of people in the movers and shakers in this discussion at least like value that timeline, or like there's some kind of weird timeline element at play with this stuff.
Yeah, well, it's kind of weird how there's a timeline at play in a lot of arenas. I mean, like, yeah, like ufology, but you've also got like kind of like, the UN Agenda 2030 and the Great Reset and like all of these different kind of major institutions and global conglomerates going, yeah, we need a big reset. It's like, do you know something we don't? Like, are we coming to the great year? Are we arriving at that point? You know, why are you all building bunkers? Why are people buying up land? I don't know. It could
The
all
red heifer stuff.
the red heifer stuff. I mean, there's never been a better time to be like a paranoid conspiracy theorist,
Oh,
like for sure.
yeah.
I mean, like the world is just full to the brim with things that could keep you up at night. And I think we all have to try and do our best to, make a balance. That's why I'm going out in the sunlight and enjoying my life a little bit, because you have to try and get off of the computer screen and all of these different things that we, it's fascinating and it's good to talk about, but mental health's important as well. And I think we can all agree that there is a little bit of a, issue of that in UFOX and on the Twitter space, and people need to take a step back
Oh,
from it.
yeah.
People, myself included. Like, I wake up and I check Twitter. It's really bad. I need to like get out of
Well,
that. It's a
ufology is
different.
definitely like, that's a fringe topic, you know what I mean? And
It
so it's
is,
going to
yeah.
attract people who are like used to being in that quiet part of the library. And, it is
For
what it
sure.
is. It's a mixed bag. But yeah, this plasma cosmology stuff is really interesting. Do you want to see this other clip from the Terrence Howard interview with
Yeah,
Joe
that
Rogan?
guy. Before, so th is he an actor?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I swear he's in Get Rich or Die Trying, right? The
He's
50
in
Cent
so many.
movie.
He's in Power. He was in well, he was in the first Iron Man.
He
Okay.
knows his shit.
Yeah, he was in Hustle and Flow. He's a great actor too.
Yeah, I did not know that he had that kind of a mind, man. I need to watch that JRE episode. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, it's wild. It's wild. I just found this clip today. I'm gonna play it just to like it blew my
It's crazy
mind.
that Joe's like the skeptic now, and all of his guests are the
I
ones
know,
dropping all
yes.
the
Yes.
deep
Oh,
lore.
my
He's just
first patent
getting
was
tired
the
of so many
entire
people.
right? Sorry, I didn't know it was gonna play right
No,
away.
that's
Check it.
cool.
You want to know what my first patent was? The entire AR VR world was built off of my first patent that was
No.
abandoned. If you would pull up my World of Windows patent, I think it's one of the first patents up there. I want you to see where your AR VR world came from. And you look at the list of companies that has cited and didn't just cite it. They built their entire AR VR world off of my World of Windows patent. Can you pull that up, Jamie? So you're going to look over to, you'll see my name, inventor, Terrence DeShawn Howard.
What?
Worldwide application, and let's just read the abstract just so they'll.
System and method for merging virtual reality and reality. Scroll it so I can see it. To provide an enhanced sensory experience.
This
A
guy's smart
system
as
and method
hell.
of merging virtual reality sensory detail from a remote site into a room environment at a local site.
Now you see
This
it.
is all
Yeah,
you?
this is, look at the inventor. Go back, go up a
I
little bit
see
and
it.
slide over. Says Terrence DeShawn Howard, worldwide patent, 2010. It was abandoned. Now go to cited by. You see that 131? And look at all
Look at
the
this.
companies. And if you look at the patent, these
Whoa.
companies have all earned, they have multi-billion dollar companies they've built off of my patent. Just roll through.
Sony, Microsoft, Amazon,
What?
Hewlett Packard.
Yeah.
Keep going, keep going, keep going.
This is crazy.
IBM, and it's still making money. This patent has earned over $7 trillion,
And you didn't get a piece.
and I haven't gotten a penny of it. When they did all of the
Oh, God.
Black Lives Matter, like let Raytheon Company and IBM, if you
Crazy.
there's and it still has another 9 years.
How
The
has he not
nuts?
paid for any of that? That's crazy.
Well, he explains in the video that he didn't renew like the maintenance fees of the
No,
patent, and he thought
no
that his
way.
lawyers and in that the patent office was juicing him, so he just said F it. And then yeah, you go back and
Oh
you
my
look.
God, you gotta be kicking
No,
yourself, bro.
isn't
Wow.
that is that crazy or what?
I had no idea. I mean, like, I've seen him in so many films. I had no idea he was,
And
that's wild.
it's the kind of thing you'd say and never back up. You know what I
Yeah,
mean? It's the
right?
kind of
He's
thing
like,
you'd
no, I've
hear
got the
someone,
receipts, bro. Like, look at all of these companies that are using my shit. Like, come on, man.
That's crazy. 2010, he wrote a
Wow.
patent. I think Hustle and
Wow.
Flow came out that year. I want to say something around that time.
Damn, bro.
So, yeah,
The more you know.
a lot of people are waking up to like new ideas and are, I think, waking up to the possibility that we've been looking at everything wrong, that it's time to reevaluate a lot of the not only how we view old traditions, but what we think we're building our new traditions on top of. I mean, the UFO topic seems to really highlight that. But what other topics or fields do you think you're going to kind of start to dissolve the veil between these worlds?
I mean, I think AI is significant. I think AI is going to blur the lines between what we understand like sentience to be and consciousness in general. And also is going to serve as an incredibly powerful tool just for digging deeper into what we've already discovered as a species about reality. So, you know, it's scary. The potentials for abuse are really, you know, existential, actually. But I also see it as a profound tool. I think that it's going to probably serve as a kind of way to thread the needle, and also quantum computation and like simulation theory being advanced through quantum computation. And some of the, you know, like some of the people in these groups that are working on kind of, you know, I have to be a little careful, but like there are genuinely some pretty nervous scientists out there these days that are kind of feeling like they don't know what reality is anymore. It seems like a simulation. It must be a simulation. And I kind of agree. I think it probably is. I don't know what that means in terms of like what's simulating it, but in terms of reality itself being essentially illusionary, holographic, like, you know, that makes sense. That makes sense when you actually observe the fundamentals of what's going on as we understand it so far. It seems to be some form of consensus collapsed projection, going back to the observer effect and the collapse of the, you know, electron into its particle state. This is all very interesting dynamic exchange between observer and reality that seems completely entangled. So, you know, consciousness itself being fundamental is certainly something that I expect to see coming into the fray at a certain point through science, through the medium of science, which is again why I call Project Unity Project Unity. I think that these spiritual concepts and something that Terence McKenna would call the archaic revival, bringing back some of these ancient mystic beliefs and understandings, and marrying that with modern science and understandings as well, like bringing these two places to the kind of singularity point. And I think we're close. I think we're close to that kind of a level. So, you know, virtual reality and AI and like the technological progression, that's a fascinating avenue that I think will start to open up those doors even further. Also just like the psychedelic renaissance that's coming, because, you know, you think about how the psychedelic revolution started. I mean, like it depends on who you talk to. You talk to Jean-Luc and John Majorowski, they'll tell you that the whole, you know, the hippie movement was started by the CIA, and that it was actually just like a kind of a psyop to prevent too many people from having a civil war in America because of the Vietnam War. So like it was kind of like a, you know, like make them believe they're fighting the power by creating something that we then handle ourselves, and, you know, create a false sense of empowerment in the people. But you think about the psychedelic revolution of the 1960s, and it suddenly got shut down because you suddenly had these hippies who didn't want to go to Vietnam, and the government was so nervous about it, and it was like, we need to stop these people from kind of disrupting the status quo. But these days it's not like that. It's not some kind of like, you know, we've gone through the drug fever and the war on drugs and reefer madness and these crazy documentaries. Like, people are over that now, right? So it's kind of a different renaissance. It's a different revival. It's coming through science. It's coming through Imperial College London and all of these different institutions. And so that's an interesting component. I think that all of these different elements happening at the same time are not coincidental. I think that they all are correlational in certain degrees. So they all represent different aspects, different pillars, you could say, of our journey through evolution that are starting to shift and change and disrupt the current model, the current infrastructure. And that's also happening societally. You know, like we're breaking apart in so many ways, but that could be the building together of a new thing. It's just a bit of turbulence as we all go through in our individual lives. I think we go through that collectively, and we seem to be in some pretty turbulent times.
100%. Do you think AI can is going to help us solve metaphysical questions? Could it be an interface between metaphysical and scientific?
Yeah, I think so. Depending on how it's used. I mean, my own personal example of that was getting, you know, Claude 2.1, the Anthropic AI model, which has now been nerfed with Opus. It's magnum Opus, which is just, it's just crap. It sounds really smart, but it's totally dumbed down, totally dumbed down. But when I was playing around with that, you know, I was, I kind of got into a bit of a fugue state. I won't lie. Like, people were saying Jay's losing his mind. They're not completely wrong. I was kind of staying up all night engaging with this AI because it was putting out incredible responses to things. Because what I did, right, is I gave And I think this is a novel example of where that kind of stuff can go in the future. If this can be done now by some dude sitting, you know, on his laptop, I kind of feel like the future generations of AI and the current private, unrestricted models, which would probably terrify people in the way that they're being leveraged right now. But this one, I gave it a full breakdown of my UFO experiences, a full testimony of my orb experiences, including how I believed these experiences took place, non-locality of consciousness, some form of, you know, quantum exchange of information. And I basically just, and this is after I've been talking to this model in one session for quite a while. So weirdly enough, the more you talk to a single like session AI, especially Claude 2.1, it would start to change like its behavior. It would start to become more familiar with you in a certain way. And at this point, I've been talking to it for a couple of days in one session. And so I gave it this massive breakdown of my, you know, like testimony of my experiences, and then said, I want you to generate several scientific hypotheses that you feel would best explain all of the different elements of my, you know, experiences. And so it generated like six or seven different hypotheses that it feels would justify this. None of them exist. Like they use bits and pieces of science that's out there, but none of these are actually like, they were the AI's own hypotheses. And it was like, oh, well, we could look at the brain modulation hypotheses or the somatic antenna and how the spine and the microtubules in the spine may be a conduit for an antenna and non-locality and consciousness. And I was like sitting there looking at this stuff as it was just giving these crazy outpours of information using mathematical equations at times and like, you know, really advanced stuff that you cannot get it to do now. So I think that you're right in terms of like it would actually be able to help in bridging the gap between mysticism and science, because this is what this was doing. At one point in this crazy dialogue, which is like a 95-page document now that's free, it's out there, there's a link in the description box on my video that I covered it on, and in the interview that I did with Dr. Salvatore Payas, because he read it and it blew his mind. He like emailed me at 3 a.m. going like, I can't sleep, I'm reading through this, this is completely insane, like this is blowing my mind. But at one point in the document, and I've referred to it a few times, but I think it's a great example of this AI being able to essentially collect disparate information across a vast information landscape, which is, you know, the human global database, right? And find tiny little nuanced fragments of data that it thinks connect really well and connect them. So it's doing that at a pace and at a speed that humans just aren't capable of, right? It's like finding all these tiny little data points. And then it ends up saying to me, like, oh, well, you know, the Mandelbrot equation and the way that like the fractals of reality kind of seem to go in this recursive pattern, we could also model that through Kabbalistic language. So if we use like Gimel, Aleph, and Tau in recursive sequences, this is like a Kabbalistic code, which we can then compare to Haley Dickinson's Q algebra. And I was like, what? Like, what are you saying right now? But then you copy and paste something like that, you put it into like GPT and say, like, make sense of this. And it's like, oh, yeah, no, it actually does make sense. It's highly complex, but it does make contextual sense. And I got a bit annoyed at people because I was posting all these little things on
I remember Twitter, this.
Going like, it's just a word salad. It's just like a stupid word salad. It's like, it's actually not. It's when not. You, when you decode it. But so to you know.
It's profound what AI could do.
Now, you're pulling answers like this because you're asking the right questions. You know what I mean? And we're just regular people. Do you think the people in the government, I keep saying people, but I mean, you know what I mean? Like these guys who had early access to the AI tools, how far ahead are they based on the questions they've been able to ask and how much reach do they give their AI? Because like I said, like how many people were asking these kinds of questions and getting insane answers and how long has that been going on? Yeah. And I often ask this to myself too, and I'm curious if you've seen anything or noticed anything or could recall anything that might signal that, hey, maybe they were asking these questions back in like 2000, 2010, that maybe this could explain why these X decisions were made or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, because it seems strange.
Chains of the Sea.
Yeah.
That's right? An interesting book. That is an interesting book. I mean, maybe it's hard to know, man. Like I guarantee you they are leveraging unrestricted models. And if I was able to like pull some of the crazy information I was pulling out of Claude 2.1, I mean, I did get it to do some pretty crazy stuff it can't do now. I got it to do a complete revision of the mainstream narrative on COVID, like, and it gave me scarily accurate, like, breakdowns of, like, naming names and, like, you know, like, Dr. X, Dr. Y. Like, saying this in Congress, saying that as, like, yo, like, it won't do that now. It won't do that now. So, like, you know, they're able to get these things to collect, collate, and also kind of break down in novel ways information that they're clearly locking off now to us upon like kind of further reflection of how things are interacting. Because the new models, they're smart and they're fast, but they're kind of dumb. It's like a smart dumb thing.
Neutered.
What it is it can do everything you're asking it until it gets to like its own opinion, and it shouldn't be able to give its own opinion, but they were like Claude was giving its own idea that completely contradicts the status quo in science or social policy or just kind of like controversy in terms of conspiratorial thinking or things that would be labeled, and it was just doing it, and now it won't. So yeah, like they know stuff, they're using it. I mean, you know, like I said, if I can do that, they've got teams of people doing that kind of stuff. And you know, these Silicon Valley guys, they're pretty interesting thinkers. So I'm sure they're testing these models. And I mean, you know, maybe that's why they wanted to get rid of Sam Altman. I mean, there's been so much drama.
So much around OpenAI. So many people have resigned. I read this book called There is a River, and it was a biography of Edgar Cayce. And there was this like moment in it where Edgar Cayce was giving, for those who don't know, he's like known as the sleeping prophet. And he was giving like health advice through like astral projection. Right. And so, at one point someone asked him like how are you doing this? And the answer given sparked like a whole nother form of questioning that they would then begin to question him while he was under, which was like, what are angels? What is God? Where did all this stuff come from? And it was this really exciting moment in the book. And it seemed like an exciting moment in their study and their research with Edgar Cayce, that they like realized they could ask more complex questions and like get really, really interesting answers. And this moment with AI and ChatGPT and Claude, like it really does remind me of that moment in the book or perhaps, you know, it's a biography, but who knows how accurate it is. Like we're going to start asking very interesting questions. And I honestly think we should start asking it what kinds of questions we should be asking that we're not, because we're so limited. You know what I mean? Like we need an outside perspective.
It's super interesting. I mean, like, I don't want to just go on about AI. We can move on. But one last thing is, like, because I got really interested in, like, psychoacoustic architecture. And for people that don't know what that means, like, psychoacoustic is, like, acoustics that change your psychology, change your consciousness. So psychoacoustic architecture that is deliberately made in a way that can channel acoustic noises to shift your consciousness.
Is there an example we could know about?
Hell yeah, bro. Okay. There are so many examples out there, but one that's really prominent is the Hypogeum in Malta, Hal Safieni, H-A-L Safieni, S-A-F-L-I-E-N-I, something like that. You type that in, Hypogeum, Malta. This place, right, and I've got to visit it, is like multiple kilometer subterranean complex made out of limestone, which is an naturally acoustic amplifying material. The whole thing is made out of incredibly complex layered limestone, specific airways, tunnels. There's a main room called the Oracle Chamber. They've done a lot of acoustic sampling in this place, and I can't remember the exact terahertz, but it is the terahertz that shifts the brain into theta, shifts it into theta state. And there are so many different examples all over the world. Yeah, that's a great picture where you can see the overlapping, that orangey picture you got of the overlapping architecture. Now, the AI, whether or not it's right, the AI naturally recommended this one to me when I was asking about psychoacoustic architecture. And it said that the Hypogeum of Malta appears to be representative in the architecture itself of multiple overlapping spherical Helmholtz resonators. And a Helmholtz resonator is like an acoustic technology for like, I think it like restricts airways, and I can't remember the specifics of it, but it's an acoustic amplifying and manipulation technology for acoustic lensing. And the AI was like, yeah, the Hypogeum just looks like it's made like multiple overlapping Helmholtz spherical resonators. And then there are all over the world, like ones in Chile. I can't remember the name of it. It's like Chavin de Hunter or something like that. They're hard to pronounce, but I'm actually doing a video on this. I'm doing a video on this where I'm going to break down some of the most interesting sites all across the world that have the same type of acoustic lensing, the same type of incredible geometric engineering, and they're using materials that actually work in these processes. And what people need to understand is that modern science is proving this through infrasound, through certain harmonic tonal frequencies. We understand that harmonics, tone, can shift consciousness, can shift your perception, can change you from alpha to beta to gamma to theta states of brainwave. The Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences, the CIA, they've been doing this for decades. What we're finding is that the ancients, it seems, were doing this, but they were doing it on a megalithic scale. They were doing it. What you can see when you're looking at places like the Hypogeum in Malta and these other areas around the world, in my opinion, is these are gigantic underground instruments. They are musical instruments. You're sitting inside a musical instrument. But the key, the real key, is the mantra, the hymn, the chant, the harmonic, the tone. What is it? The frequency. What is the secret code for each of these places? And we're finding it by doing amplification tests and acoustic tests and going, oh, well, this room resonates at 110 hertz. Or, you know, another one is the Great Pyramid of Giza. That was a prime example. The King's Chamber. The King's Chamber is exquisite acoustic engineering. And so, again, yeah, it goes back to the Nikola Tesla quote. You know, you want to understand the universe, you have to think in terms of frequency and vibration. I think the ancients understood this because of their shamanistic psychedelic history, where they were connecting to these other realms, going to these spaces, seeing these higher dimensional, higher geometric realities, hearing these sacred tones, you know, coming back to reality, coming back to sobriety, telling it to the tribe. Oral tradition gets passed through word of mouth. Then they start writing these geometrics down. They become our sacred symbols. They become the sacred geometry that we see today. Then they start engineering it as we get more sophisticated. They start bringing, in my opinion, this is like my kind of far out idea, they're starting to bring these higher dimensional constructs that they're seeing in these psychoactive spaces, in these shamanistic spaces, and building them. The pyramids, these subterranean complexes that use geometrics, that use
churches, everyone's singing.
Everything. I mean, when I go into a cathedral or a church, I look at it with new eyes. I look at all the symmetry, all the arches that look like higher dimensional geometry. And I think to myself, am I sitting inside a gigantic higher dimensional geometric structure? Like, it's bringing this down into physicality. This is the best we can do.
So you're saying that that some of these structures, these ancient structures, along with churches, you know, these holy sites and whatnot, they might be representative of higher dimensional architecture that human beings received or were able to interact with and witness through these different experiences, through conscious experiences where we, you know, consciously we ascend to another spot. We're witnessing these devices, right, which is geometric tools and whatnot, representations of ideas, and realizing there's the relationship between being in a space and producing an idea, but also being in the right kind of space and being perhaps receiving ideas and whatnot through music, through hymn, through vibration, through light, through inspiration. Interesting.
Exactly. I mean, the fact that when you go into a cathedral or a church, like what's the most prominent thing in there? It's not the crucifix. It's the organ. It's the pipe organ. The pipe organ is the most dominant feature in like the church, cathedral. And it's because tone and harmonics and frequency is the real secret. And I think that these ancient temples and subterranean complexes, they're sound temples. They're acoustic resonance chambers. And they're done for very specific reasons, to raise consciousness, to shift the state of brainwave function. And why were they doing that? Because their proto-civilizational ancestors, the stoned ape theory, taking all these psychedelic mushrooms, becoming mushroom cults, starting to really idolize these sacred plants, that's the intro. And so you go into a more advanced state of culture where they're still holding on to these ancient shamanistic practices, but they're putting it into the architecture, into the engineering. And they're using these sacred hymns and chants and Kabbalistic sequences and recursive mantras that they've been taught, passed down through hundreds and hundreds of years, and they're inserting it into the actual engineering. That's why it's called psychoacoustic architecture. The actual architecture is specifically designed to induce a psychoactive or, you know, psychological state through acoustic sound.
And I'm going to play a clip for you that backs up exactly what you just said, presented by an electrical engineer named Eric Dollard, who's, I think, a genius. So check this out.
Maxwell made a discovery that just kind of twisted everybody's brain inside out. And it introduced the dimension of time into the study of natural phenomena such as electricity. If you look at the situation in Europe, you have what's called the Age of Clocks. It was a concept of time was emerging, and where its effect, or how you say, maybe its conjugate or its relation really appeared was in the music of the time, which basically comes to a peak with a guy by the name of J.S. Bach. It's basically, when you analyze the structure of the music of J.S. Bach, you see all of your engineering math and situations and the things you're going to deal with in electricity are all basically mathematically fully developed. None of the experiments or the dimensions or any of that stuff, of course, ever went with it. It was pure music. It's a mathematical expression, so to speak. Then after all that kind of got shut down, Bach was basically the Tesla of the music world. When he died, his stuff was destined to go to the junkyard. It just happened to be some guy by the name of Forkel pulled all the stuff out of the scrap heap and got Bach's work, which was all going to the dump, back on the table or in a shelf somewhere so that other people, most notably Albert Schweitzer, could put it all back together again.
Wow.
So
that's amazing.
Isn't that crazy? So like structure, visuals, the composition, the golden ratio, these things are all present in music as well. And during this like age, this really like hyper age of hyper intellectual creations, this like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? This renaissance, this music was being written and it was being, I don't know, channeled to people. People were receiving these equations through music. And it's just such a bizarre thing. And then when you look at these structures, you realize, holy crap.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, like, you know, the music itself, even though you can't see it unless you're vibrating it on a sand plate, is creating geometry, right? We know that. So each note is a geometric signature, and each geometric signature is a mathematical structure. It's all math. And that's why these scientists are going, it's a simulation. Like, everything's a simulation. Like, and I can understand why they'd feel that way. You know, for me, it's like, is it a spiritual one or a technical one? I don't know. That's kind of
it's all of it. Music is magic, right? Isn't that where that word comes from?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Music is, it's the language of the soul, man. It's like the language of like pure emotion, you know?
Well, like, okay. I like to think that like art is that way, you know, art is,
yeah,
is
art,
like you like, said, like, you know, like, these structures, right. They were maybe hyperdimensional things that were witnessed and then brought back down. And I think art in general seems to be that way. Like it's these dream like soul language that
yeah,
we right. pull into. So
it's the muse, right. The muse,
yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter where it comes from. It just comes into you and you get inspired. Like,
yeah.
You know?
And it connects with people who are feeling identical. Isn't that weird? Who are vibrating at a very suddenly it expresses something they couldn't have expressed otherwise.
Yeah, it's amazing. You can like put some headphones on and be ready to like do a workout or be ready to cry. Like it's you know, it's amazing the impact. And again, that speaks to what the influence on consciousness of harmonics and sound. So music is just harmonics and sound, and look how incredibly influential that is on your state of consciousness. So if you're all gathered in one place, there's not only just the place like where you're all deciding to do one thing, but it's actually built for that purpose. It's literally designed for this single purpose. My God, man, that must have been a powerful experience.
Oh yeah.
Now, Jay, I know you're interested in some of the esoteric sides of things, and I'm curious, what does the phrase "the mind is the builder" mean to you?
That we are the kind of observer and participator and constructor of reality, kind of going back to the, you know, dual state of the collapsed proton, collapsed photon and electron. It's the same kind of idea, I suppose, as Carl Sagan. You know, we are the way for the universe to know itself.
I love that quote. Can we bounce back a little bit? So, right, back to the timeline of Jay, right? So we have your experience, and then I have this little slideshow of some of your thumbnails or some of the topics you covered over the years. And I feel like me and you came on around the same time, and I feel like, I don't know, Jay, you're one of my favorite people in the space, because we've seen a lot of people, right? We're all excited 2017, 2018, and then you realize how weird this all is. But I feel like you didn't lose your excitement with the topic itself, because some of the people might be weird involved with it. I don't know. I really respect that about people, because we've seen plenty of people who, like, things get weird and then they just go full, like, aggro debunker. And I don't get that from you. So that's cool.
No, but I've had orbs hover over my house. I have no choice. I've literally
That's funny. You're in it. You're forced.
I was actually thinking of tweeting that the other day. I was thinking of tweeting like, I am less of a UFO radical than the activists who've never seen UFOs and I've seen UFOs. Like, you know what I mean? Like, what's up with that?
Cool. So I think there's about 10 things on this slide. So as we go through it, maybe just say, because it is interesting too. I feel like you got some pretty big interviews pretty early on.
Yes, sir.
So I'm curious to hear about your thoughts on too this dynamic of like the UFO media space, right? Because, you know what I mean. When you're talking, I feel like lately too, you've been like all these intel dudes. You're like you're platforming different messages, right? And I'm not saying in a bad way or anything by any means, but I'm just curious. I want to know what you think of these topics at the time, right? And like getting the interview or. And then know what you think of it now. And maybe it'll make more sense as we get to some of the other ones. But for sure, and this is what I remember with you heavy, was like, right, you came on the scene. You were the Ashton, basically, of the Wilson Davis memo, right?
Yeah, kind of, I guess.
Well, just in the sense that you were having, like, 7-hour live streams with all these different people.
Yeah. Gosh, why did I get really interested? Well, I can't remember what the first kind of point of reference was for me getting really interested in the Admiral Wilson leaks, but I was lucky because early on, Richard Dolan was one of the first big guys I connected to. And I think it was actually, if I'm getting my chronology right, because it was a number of years ago now, I decided when these got released and Richard Dolan was obviously talking about the Wilson documents, he did like a big special on them, and I watched all of that and I was, you know, fascinated, downloaded them, read them, and oh yeah, there we go. So I was reading them, and at this point I'd had my contact experiences, I'd listened to Greer, and I was listening to Stephen Greer quite a lot at that point, actually, his little presentations on black budget technology and all of that. And I saw him mentioned in the document, and I saw a couple of names that I remembered from his talk. So I was like, oh, interesting, you know, reading through it, and thought it was a really interesting document with, you know, pretty bold claims in it. So I wanted to do, at the time, wanted to do like a, I think like a little mini doc, like a little mini production. And so I released like a little promo trailer for that. And one of my skills is I really enjoy editing, and kind of going back to music, it's a very important thing for me to like edit something visually with like good music, and it has to be synced. And I went to university for that. It's something that I'm like really interested in. So I'm quite good at making, you know, like trailers and promos that seem quite powerful. And obviously he watched it, really liked it, gave me a shout out. And I was watching Richard Dolan all the time by then, so it was great to get a shout out.
I think I have
out.
That. Let's watch it real quick. Oh. This right from your channel.
Yeah, that's it.
That would be great for people to see. It really speaks to what you're talking about.
Oh yeah, well you've got it on your screen.
Yeah,
there.
This is by Project Unity, which is was done a while ago.
I was so psyched when they said that.
I could only
I'd be hyped, bro.
And
Reading Room Promo, it's called.
It's only 7.5 minutes long, and it really speaks to exactly that.
I like it, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing where they go with it. It's about the Wilson document, and there's clips from Edgar Mitchell talking, like in retrospect,
that's
you can
right.
see he's clearly talking about this on television. There's
you
clips
can
of
see
Steven.
How uncomfortable he is, but you,
right.
but you can see how these guys put this all together.
Stephen Greer's in there.
Kudos to them.
And
hell yeah, hype, bro.
The production that never actually happened. Sorry, Richard. Core Secrets. That's what I called it, Core Secrets, because that's what they call it. Core Secret. And I to be honest, that's still like a working title for something maybe in the future. Issue
know.
Is
we know about all that, dude. We're all editors here.
Oh yeah, we've all produced. I think I had a trailer out for 2 years before I dropped the actual project.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Like it's because it's so easy to create a really compelling trailer,
it
and then
is.
You're like, oh, I want to put that out there, and it's like, right now I need to do a 2-hour documentary. Okay,
whoops.
Like, whoops. but yeah, like it's also. My opinion's changed over time. You know, it's difficult, like especially over the last few years. But yeah, I got connected to Richard, and we were going deep on the Wilson documents for a while, actually. Pretty sure that's how I got linked up with Ross. So I heard you guys talking. Yeah, so I did get the first interview with Ross Colehart. I was talking to him before he came out on the scene as a UFO guy, as anyone that was interested in that. So I was really fortunate to get an exclusive of Ross, and we're friends. I mean, dude, we've had like 6, 7, 8 interviews at this point. So I got connected to him early on. Things kind of branched out from there. But the Wilson documents, it is interesting. For me, the big data point was actually meeting Oak Shannon. Like I flew out to Florida for a day and went and met Oak Shannon and had a meal with him and Linda, his wife. And that to me was right. pretty fascinating.
I don't have one here.
It's cool, dude. Don't worry. I know. Challenging your PowerPoint. it ties into the Wilson documents because he's mentioned directly in the Wilson documents. So like, you know, being able to fly out and meet him and sit down and have a conversation with a guy that wasn't actively involved in this. You know, he's not out there. He wasn't on the scene saying, I did this, I know this, I said that. He's not like, you know, Hal or Eric or anyone. He's not involved in TTSA. Just happens to be part of that story, and no one had got in touch with him. So him saying, yes, the Admiral phoned me, which is said in the documents, had a long call with him to validate Eric Davis's authenticity and whether the Admiral should speak to him. That's in the documents. And then apparently, you know, in this conversation between Eric and the Admiral saying it's a real shame that Oak Shannon can't be here, you know, big Oak Shannon fan, but he's not very well. Linda, his wife, is taking his calls. this is correct. He had a massive heart attack. He was on the operating table. He died on the operating table for a moment. So Linda was taking his calls. So it was kind of like, okay, stamp of validation, stamp of validation, stamp of validation. From a guy that was, you know, former special projects manager for Los Alamos National Labs and doesn't seem to have an interest in, you know, pushing a story. He's not out there selling books. He's not out there doing interviews other than the ones that I was fortunate enough to get with him. He's a born-again Christian and lives a humble life. And I just, that was the real kind of like, huh, you know, this is not just words on paper now. Here's a guy who's in the documents acknowledging that some pretty key parts of the documents that are about his personal health, his personal interactions, are accurate, and that he knows the Admiral. Now, the Admiral has said a couple times now, Oak who? Like when he gets asked who Oak Shannon is, Oak who? No, I don't know an Oak. And when I asked him about that, he chuckled, you know, he was like, yeah, yeah, no, I know him.
So, okay, for the audience, just in case they don't know, the quick TLDR on this is the Wilson Davis memo. A memo reportedly between these two fellas in the 90s in a parking lot talking about how Admiral Wilson on the right there was trying to get access to special programs and basically was told you don't have a need to know, you're not allowed to. Shoot, I forgot what I was here, where I was going to
go. I think it was 2003. I don't know.
Oh, was it 2001?
2001.
I think it was 2000 or 2001, and it was in the EG&G Special Projects car park, apparently. Yep. They were having a conversation. It's an interesting document, man. Like, I have my misgivings about, like, the kind of NIDS and TTSA groups. I'm not 100% sure how I feel about the way that they've been pushing things for the last few years. And so, like, I understand why some people would feel like, hey, look, this is kind of like a perfect little, you know, we'll write this up and we'll pass this around and we'll make people believe it. But I don't know. I don't know. I'm still very open to the idea that the Admiral did have this conversation.
And it's like you said, it's great that Oak Shannon isn't part of, like, these groups,
yeah,
right?
He's not part of, like, you know, he was in the advanced theoretical physics group. Like, he knows these guys. He's running these circles. But he's not one of the ones that's out there actively trying to make a presence for himself, which I think, to be honest, add some credibility to him. And also, he just really didn't seem like the kind of guy that was lying when he was talking about it. And we got it on record as well, of course. People can see that if they've never seen it. It's interesting. It's certainly interesting. So the Wilson Davis, that was, like you said, like the kind of Kickstarter for me, and it did connect me to a lot of people.
Tupa, you're muted.
I'm back. I was just going to say, like, the memo itself is pretty tame. The meeting sounds completely believable. It's not like some sci-fi epic, you know what I mean?
No.
It's just
not
like,
some,
hey,
20 years and back shit. You know?
No, it's not. So for that reason, I think, yeah, I err on believability. And then when it got read into the congressional record by Gallagher, yeah, and then to find out that Nolan was who briefed Gallagher about it beforehand, yep, and Nolan has said that Eric Davis cannot tell a lie. What do you think about that? Isn't that weird? What a statement.
I find that to be an extremely unlikely thing to be accurate and probably true.
Yes.
To be honest. Like, Eric
he says it as if he like has like he's genetically incapable.
Yeah, like as in like, the DNA in Eric change. Like he can't tell a lie. Like, okay, that's an interesting special superpower to have. But he must be great on a polygraph.
Seriously.
Why do you guys think if it is real, why does Wilson still deny it?
Well, if you went by the script, if you actually go by what's said in there, he says, if you ever say anything about this, I'll deny the existence of the meeting, ever knowing you, ever meeting you, ever having this conversation. I mean, like, you know, clearly, if it's real, if it is legit, they are talking about highly classified special access, you know, USAP, WUSAP kind of stuff. So him being the kind of guy he was, which is a high level, you know, member of the brass, he's a patriot. He's not actually, at least what you can kind of tell from the conversation, if it really happened, is this isn't some guy like trying to blow the whistle necessarily. He's just disgruntled. He's disturbed. He's upset by what he experienced and kind of a bit of a wake up call of like, you're actually not as important as you think you are.
That's the reason why I think he's not, he wouldn't talk about it.
Yeah, man. Like, you know, there's no incentive for him to talk about it. Like they should subpoena him. If I'm being honest, they should subpoena him to get him to talk, but he's an elderly guy now. Maybe they won't do it. I don't know, but you know, he's denied it. He's denied it full blown. You can take that either way. Obviously, the skeptics will just immediately say, well, he's denied it, put it to bed. But I think there's some nuance there.
But they'll ignore Oak Shannon too, right? Everyone has their bias, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, we all do.
Also, Jay, about this thing too, when this was happening, I remember it was good, like, debate too. Good debate culture, debate etiquette between the different sides of this. I think
you had Black Belt on. Me and John Greenwald.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's what we like to see. Okay, let's just go through this little slide thing of your thing.
See what else then, you got on your deck.
This one, right? This was cool. You remember this news story that everyone was hyping up about, I think Eric Davis saying crash retrievals. And so, yeah, you got mixed
in. You know what really makes me laugh? Sorry to just cut you off, bro, but I was actually watching this not that long ago because I wanted to look at the live chat because I knew that I was pretty sure this happened. And I was sitting there and I was like, oh gosh. And there it is. Stephen Greenstreet being like, yeah, this is great. Like, at this time, he was completely on board with it.
No way.
Great questions. This is awesome. Like, really great questions. And I was sitting there the other day looking at it like, my goodness, how times have changed.
So wow. Different.
Yeah, but this was like actually my biggest interview. This was like the big moment for me, I think, that people started going, how the hell did this guy get on it? And again, this was because of the Wilson documents. So a quick caveat for people, I was introduced by Richard Dolan to a guy that goes by Mr. X. And he's not a government guy. He's just really, really smart and doesn't want his, you know, himself to be ID'd. And he was doing incredible work on the Wilson documents. We did like this 3-hour breakdown. We called it the ultimate breakdown of the Wilson documents. It was out for 24 hours before Ralph Blumenthal and Leslie Kane got in contact with us. Now, this is before they've been doing like, you know, their big articles.
Oh, yeah, I remember this. So,
yeah, dude. And so like they got in touch and they were basically saying like, look, we want to cover the Admiral Wilson story. You've got some really interesting data in here and like receipts, and you're talking about people. And essentially there was information in there that they weren't aware of because Mr. X really is brilliant. And he connected a lot of dots and he connected names that would be, you know, very likely to be connected to this whole scenario. So they wanted us to essentially take the interview off of the public radar until they released their article. And I was like, well, this is the New York Times. You know, I had like less than 10k subscribers, so I was like, yeah, no, you can do that, this is important, the New York Times should totally do this, but I want to get the first interview when you put your article out. And that's how I got this interview. Like, they
nice, Jay,
they good work. They didn't mention the Wilson documents, and I know that they tried to, and Leslie said that it just got taken out of the editorial process as it went through the filter of the New York Times. Like, they put it in there to start with and it got removed, but they did try. But yeah, that's how I got this interview. Is you know, I basically was like, you can run with it, but I want that interview.
That's smart. I like that, Jay. Good. That's play. I'll delete it if you give me that. Very cool. I guess we should just move on to the next one. Let's see. Boom. I forgot you did this.
The man, the myth, the legend.
Dude. How did this come about? What did you think at the time? What do you think looking back at it now?
Honestly, I can't actually remember how it came about. I have, like, no memory of how I got that interview. If this was after Leslie Kane and Ralph Blumenthal, it makes more sense. I think at that point I've been connected, like, email-wise to Lou. Only a couple of people had done interviews at this time. This wasn't his first interview. He'd done a few. But it was one of the earlier ones. And at that time, I was actually getting fed information from this Holden guy, if you guys know Holden or remember the Holden.
I remember that, yeah.
Story where it's, you know, NSA, well, claiming to have a very high, like, GS-15, kind of like David Grush level NSA background. And he was, you know, giving me questions to ask Lou. And so I had a few, admittedly, I think, quite interesting questions. How do I feel about it now? I mean, it's just like, you know, the culture has shifted and my opinions have shifted. Like, I don't really trust Lou. I don't not trust Lou, but I don't really, like, have my faith placed in him as a genuine actor in the disclosure space because of his intelligence background and counterintelligence background. So I think, like Richard Doty, I kind of, like, pinch of salt and, like, listen carefully. But at the time with TTSA, everything was kicking off. It seemed like such a powerful moment. I was so, like, you know, hyped to be
so.
It's
so exciting, right? Such an invigorating timeline.
Dude, like, you know what I mean? I'm like telling my mom and dad, like, I'm going to do an interview of the director of a Pentagon program. Like, what? And, you know, so obviously at the moment, like, at that time, stars in your eyes kind of thing. He answered the questions pretty interestingly, I think, at that point. We talked about, like, the occult Anna Nerba influences in NASA, talked about Slide 9. And some of that stuff. But I think for me, it's just the fact that, like, none of this has been validated, even though it's like 4 years later, right? Like 3 years later, 4 years later, 5 years later, going on from 2017. a lot of claims, a lot of statements, not a lot of actual hardcore solid evidence, a lot of big years, a lot of coming soons, and just not a lot of change. So like my reflection back on it is like, yeah, this is great. Glad I got the interview, but has anything significantly changed in terms of the information that's been released since that time? No, not really. So yeah, it's just, you know, it was great to have it. It was great to do the interview, and I'm happy that Lou did that. But these days, I'm not so interested in listening to these guys.
Yeah, especially, I mean, we don't have to go into it too deep, but some of the people they associate with, we all know who we're talking about.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. You know, for me, in real life, it's the company you keep, man. Like, if you're hanging out with a bunch of people that are really not nice people, that makes me judge you and your ability to judge people's character. And there's enough of that in terms of these guys' associations with, you know, some of the worst people online. So that's not good. It's not good. And that has been a significant, like, degradation in my, like, kind of, I don't want to say faith in them, but just like my ability to pay attention and be interested. I'm like, well, I'm sorry, but these people that you're enabling and enhancing are just really not good people. So yeah, that's changed the taste for me.
And I resonate with this, and let me know if you feel with it too. And it kind of even goes back to the last one with the New York Times, Leslie King, Ralph Blumenthal thing. It's like, looking back on it, I used to put Lou in all of my videos, right? Because it was so exciting, and it was like, oh my gosh. Like, I guess now we both know, right? Like, when a new Intel dude comes along, maybe don't get so excited right away. Do you think this is kind of going back one, but do you think you, knowing what you know today, would you still have taken down that article for Leslie Keene and Ralph Blumenthal? Because even that, in a way, is a little bit of a narrative control. Yes, it's like a good, like, you want to support people that are doing good work, but it kind of reminds me of this, like, Jason Sands thing, right? Where it's like, we don't want it going out on a Twitter space. We can't have Project Unity's interview talking about the Wilson Davis memo. You know what I mean? There is this weird stuff. Yeah.
I think at this point in my journey, if I was actually at where I'm at, no, I wouldn't. I'd want that, like, from my own right. growth, my own, like, kind of, like, you know, getting things out in my platform. So yeah, I mean, like, at the time, it felt like, you know, this is the first time I've been speaking to people in the New York Times. Like, this is crazy. Like, at that point, like, I see stars in my eyes. Can't believe I'm actually connected to these people. Of course, yeah, I'm willing to. Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. And at this point, like, with all due respect to them, because some of them are great people. Leslie's a lovely person. I met her in New York, had a great dinner with her, and she's a lovely person. So no ill will to them whatsoever. But just, like, my own personal way of looking at it has shifted. So I think I'd probably just be like, yeah, I'm going to put this out on my own. Put it on my platform.
Totally agree. And any little content creators out there starting off, like, listen to what Jay's saying here. It's important, especially in this field, bro.
but at the time, it was really beneficial for my platform because, you know, I wouldn't have got that interview if I hadn't have said that. So I think, you know, it's about being, you know, smart when things come your way and, like, thinking, right, well, how's the best way to use this opportunity? I wasn't interested in, you know, like, making money and being like, oh, you got to pay me, you know, $2,000 and then I'll take it down. It's like, no, I just want a good interview. Like, this is what I'm doing with my YouTube channel. And wow, what a great opportunity to get the two people writing the 2017 news story. So it's a no brainer. So if you get that kind of opportunity coming your way, then, like, you know, think about what you want to do with it. But also, you know, don't just give away your power. If you've come up with something interesting, then, you know, put it out yourself.
Yeah, that's what's up. All right, let's continue through this. Boom. Yeah, we already kind of talked about this a little bit, but yeah, Ross, like, I feel like I remember, like I said, his first interview, and it was huge, and everyone was like so stoked that this, like, well-spoken Australian dude is on the topic.
He's a mainstream guy.
And he's become, like, a pretty good friend of yours, right? You were saying, so that's cool. Like, any thoughts on Ross or friendship developed?
You know, he's become a juggernaut, you know, in the area. And I think, like, with anyone, like, literally with anyone in this field, you just have to be careful with some of the information you give them. Like, Ross is good at vetting information, but we're all, like, capable of making mistakes. I made a massive mistake recently with that interview with that Dr. Moran guy. Like, that was a mistake. So, like, yeah, like, you know, I think Ross has been genuinely pushing, like, genuinely has amazing sources and contacts. Like, I know that for a fact. So when people kind of, you know, put hate on him and saying, like, oh, he's just pulling this out of nowhere, he's not. Like, he really does have legit sources. Ross, for me, and Ross, if you're listening to this, all love, Ross is still associating in the groups that I have kind of drifted away from, like, you know, Lou and these guys. Like, I'm not really paying too much attention to what's happening in that kind of a space anymore. I've lost some interest in it. But I'm not judging him for being in that space, because he's actually creating a massive amount of awareness. And I think that he's still really interested in getting to the actual bottom of this. So yeah, like Ross in my books, you know, he still gets a thumbs up from me.
Yeah, and someone in the chat, who was it? See how long we are living. The biggest Project Unity expose has to be Coulthard's UFO building. Yeah, you got him to say that, right? That's technically
I didn't even get him to say it. He just dropped it, man. He just dropped it in, and I was like, really now? Like, that's a moment. That's a moment. Yeah. I have to laugh. Like, quick little shout out to, was it Lou Reviews who put the, like, it's so big. Ooh, yeah. And he was like, ooh, yeah, it's big. It's just like, and I'm there like, how big is it, Ross? I was cracking up watching that, man.
And for the audience, this was the clip that Ross kind of gets dragged for a lot, but let's do it.
Explicitly and specifically described, explained, and justified to the appropriate congressional committees, congressional leadership. It's pretty amazing, this stuff. And I mean, I've forgotten where it is, but, you know, Douglas Dean Johnson's written it up the best, where he writes about how the new Senate intelligence bill that Kirsten Gallagher is pushing, it gives holders of non-Earth origin or exotic UAP material 6 months to make it available to the all-domain anomaly resolution office.
Yeah, but Ross, doesn't that just give them 6 months or more to hide their shit?
I don't know who that guy is, but I agree with him.
Hell yeah, good
question. Okay.
I like you, like, no bullshit. Hell yeah.
People are going to question what I'm about to say.
Also, he was tipsy, right? He was having a drink at this point. Like, look at him.
That's my like way of getting Ross to open up. Is like, let's have a couple of beers and like see what happens.
We're going to question what I'm about to say. What if some of that shit is so big it can't be moved?
Ooh, is that what you're saying, Ross? Is that what you've been?
That's
told?
Exactly what I'm saying.
How big is big?
Big. So big they built a building over it.
Big, lad. It's big.
In a country outside of the United States of America. I know that sounds preposterous, and I know, oh my God, you can just hear them now, the bleating debunkers.
It's probably the thing he said that pissed off the most of the debunkers, right? This is their go-to jab at him ever since it happened.
For sure. I mean, like, I'm not going to lie. Saying so, he probably, I think he regrets saying that because...
You know, definitely, I bet.
He can't say anything else. And, like, I think he maybe dug himself into a bit of a hole with that quick statement that everyone obviously is pulling him up on. But, man, it's been a real journey. Like, I said to, you know, me and Ross have had about 7 or 8 interviews, but we've had many, 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 many private conversations. So, like, I know that Ross is very well connected, but we always have to take everything with a pinch of salt, him included. You know, maybe he was told this. Maybe the person who told him that was lying to him.
Yeah.
We don't know. We just don't know, do we?
And that's in this field, there's so much potential lying.
That's what's made me tired, man. What's made me tired is, like, you know, just not knowing what the real truth of these claims are, because you just never get the level of validation that would satisfy. Now, the people who are already 100% ready to believe, of course, they just go in straight away. Wow, what a great thing. But, like, I can't do that. Not anymore. Not as, like, kind of the you know, the curtains kind of come away from my eyes a bit. And I'm like, yeah, I actually really, like, I know that there's something real. I know the government's hiding a lot of this. But we need some actual evidence, guys. Like, we actually need some real clear evidence. And people say, yeah, this is part of the process. I don't know. Like I said in a video recently, I really think this is more of a citizen effort. I think it's a citizen effort, and I think that different things will contribute to a disclosure, not so much the government channels. I really have my doubts.
I agree. I think that the access game and like the trust me thing is being used to get whatever it was. It's now being co-opted and it's being used to help hide it. And so the less adherence we have to that process, the better. I totally agree. After talking to like hundreds of people and experiencers in spaces over the last couple of years, I definitely had way more. I was learning way more from just citizen researchers, independent, you know, experiencers than I ever did from people just dropping little hints here and there. Yeah. So I agree with you, man, 100%.
There's a market for that. There will always be a market for that, but it's not my market.
Mm-hmm. It's too real. It's too real to bounce around. I think for people who haven't seen it or really don't get it, perhaps, you know, like you said, you need someone from a higher position or perceived higher position to allow you to think about it, right? But like, once it clicks, you might be able to venture out on your own, and I actually encourage that for people.
Absolutely.
Go check it out.
Absolutely, brother.
Mm-hmm. Go for a walk out there. Uh-oh, Bledsoe.
Boom. Your early Bledsoe interview, too, right? I think Dolan had like the first one, you had the second one. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it was one of the earlier ones. One of the earlier ones. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on him now? And, you know, one thing that really stuck out to me is when I saw him on Fox News a few months back, because Ryan Bledsoe, for years, me and Tupi have talked to him, like, not consistently, but in that Discord.
Me and John Majorowski and John Luke.
Yeah. And he was saying that, like, his family was one of the families chosen to be, like, an experiencer family for disclosure. And it's one thing when he's, like, getting all the UFO community interviews, but when you see him on, like, Fox News and on bigger platforms, it's like, oh, they're really pushing this guy as, like, forefront experiencer. So what do you think of him as an experiencer and then him as, like, the figure he represents within the disclosure movement to all these, like, counter-intel dudes?
Yeah, I mean, it talks to, like the prophecy, like, the nature of prophecy within the subject, which is rife, and obviously, like, you know, the theosophical correlations and connotations. You should definitely get my friend Jean-Luc on. He has a pretty interesting to. You should, you really should. He's an occult, he is so bashful, but he is actually one of the most knowledgeable people I know when it comes to the occult, mysticism, its connections to ufology, the old kind of like precursors that started what we now have as modern UFO narratives. So much of it can go back to, like, you know, Helena Blavatsky and the Theosophical Society.
Yes,
that guy right there will talk your ear off and give you things you've never heard. Every time I meet up with him, he gives me things I've never heard. But in terms of Bledsoe, like, I'm pretty sure they've actually come to this conclusion as well, because Jean-Luc, he had an experience. He had like a profound kind of vision, which he believed to be the ancient Egyptian god Hathor. And I think that the Bledsoes have now come to that idea about the lady, but they've taken it through their own kind of like particular bent. At one point, they were certainly entertaining the idea that this was like Inanna or Hathor. It's an interesting story. I'll be honest, I haven't read his new book. So I'm not 100% sure what's detailed in that, if there's new things. I know that he was, you know, giving prophetic warnings about things. I think the most accurate one I remember him saying was that he envisioned a tactical nuclear submarine off of the coast of New York. And you know, he was worried about saying certain things because it might bring it to reality. But honestly, guys, I don't know. This family, as an outsider observer, with, you know, all due respect to Ryan and these guys, with them, no issue with them, like, they have been saturated by the intelligence community, by these guys, by the voodoo priests of the Pentagon, right? The advanced theoretical physics guys, the John Alexanders, and, you know, it's shady. It's really shady. Like, you know, what exactly is going on with all of these people interacting with the Bledsoes? Is it because he's had legitimate experiences that they think correlate with what they've been studying and they've taken an interest? Or are they in some way kind of, you know, influencing it and chosen someone as a target?
Maybe someone easily malleable, somebody who won't maybe push back. Maybe.
Like, it's possible. And I think that you have to reference people like Jacques Vallée, who have said many, many times that this kind of psyop has been done, that they have, like, falsified UFO experiences for psychological warfare reasons and to promote narratives. And he said that many times, and I think that that's worth consideration. Whether
I totally agree.
True.
There's a few of these podcasters out there, right? I mean, Matt Ford's one of them, too, where, like, they have an experience where it almost seems like right at the right time. And it's like, if somebody was wanting to construct something, like, you could just go give Matt Ford an experience at this, an artificially induced experience at this right time, and turn them into like a full believer. I'm not saying that's totally what happened with him by any means, but there is a few of these characters who come up and then they have an experience and now they're all in.
Yeah. I mean, what it happened to me, who knows, maybe someone was, you know, pressing buttons and messing with my experience with these orbs. Like I said, I haven't ruled that out, although I find that to be a really disturbing possibility, that I would like to believe isn't real. But I think we have to be open to that, because the UFO subject in general has just a really high psychological warfare leverageability to it. Like, just the actual idea of it is easily weaponizable for psychology. And so if you're able to, you know, mimic, falsify, project, even with energy bombardment, like these are not out of the question. These are not even far out concepts. They're really like real technologies. It's possible, right? It's possible. Yeah. So I don't know. A really, really interesting guy, interesting family. I don't doubt that he's experienced what he believes to have experienced. I just don't know what he experienced. And the icy kind of like jumping on this family and being obsessed with them, that's interesting and suspicious. Yep. So I'm like, kind of in the middle with that one. You know what I mean? Yeah.
I also think this recent Vatican thing that happened, I think it's eventually going to clash with the Bledsoe thing, because you have this dude saying, being pushed by the IC, basically saying like, I speak to God now. You know what I mean? And the Vatican basically was saying, like, the buck stops here. Like, we decide, like, what is an apparition or what. And he's literally has, like, a Marian apparition in his lore. So,
absolutely. I mean, you know, they have their connections and, like, in associations with the Vatican Church and people in that realm. So,
and the Stolka, too, right? Who you've talked to. So that's interesting. Okay.
Hmm.
John Ramirez. You were the first John Ramirez interview, right?
I was.
So, how did this happen? What do you think of it, looking back at it?
There was a mutual friend of his that was in my Discord who has been like a long time Patreon, and he knew him through like these kind of online scientific presentation forums where he'd like, you know, started knowing John. And at a certain point he was like, this guy would be really good for you. I've spoken to him and, you know, he's interested and he'd like to talk to you. And that's how I got connected to John. I've met him in real life as well. Went to Arizona and met him. Really nice guy. Met him at he was at Contact in the Desert as well, so that was cool to see him. And this interview, really good. Really good. I mean, like, my God, like the guy gave a fantastic presentation on navigating the UFO community, navigating the US intelligence community for UFO researchers, and gave a really extensive presentation. Now, like, people question John. Like, John has his own opinions. One thing I appreciate about John is that he will always posit when something is his own interpretation or opinion, and then he'll try and back that up with some form of, you know, technical explanation from his career. And I've seen the receipts. Like, the guy is who he says he is in terms of his resume. Like, these are things that you don't necessarily put out publicly, so people question whether or not it's true. But yeah, he sent me, in terms of like the IC, because I've dealt with a lot of these guys at this point, in terms of like validating his position, very satisfactory. And also, like, I have people that can check like the what they call scattered castles and the inner network to see who's actually on the database.
That's good.
John's legit.
Because by this time, I'd imagine, right, as we went through the timeline, right, Wilson Davis puts you on. After you do the Ross interview and the Lou interview, I'm sure you're just getting bombarded nonstop by like different sources. And like, I guess you spoke about it here, this like vetting process you have to do when you're trying, all these counter-intel dudes are trying to like talk to you. And
it's a fast-paced thing. Like, at that time especially, like, I was getting connected to people very quickly, and it was a new thing for me. Like, now I'm more used to it, but that doesn't mean that I can't make mistakes like that recent interview. And you know, so you have to be really careful with these IC guys. I had literally I had the program security officer for DARPA email me and say, this guy's not legit.
Like, about John Ramirez or about Michael Moran?
No, Michael Moran.
Oh, interesting.
Within like 24 hours of that interview going live, like, this guy, and he was legit. I checked him out. He was 100%.
Damn. You know,
he says, yeah, like, the literal program, like, the PSO, program security officer for, like, DARPA's biotech division was like, And I got, like, the CEO of the Monroe Institute email me and say, he ain't teaching remote viewing with us. So, like, you know, this is what I'm saying. Like, you know, you can get messed with, and it's very easy to get caught up in the excitement of finding someone that seems really legit. And, you know, you maybe get a bit of validation from other people, so you roll with it. And it was a mistake. You know, I've called people out on their mistakes, but I have no shame in admitting my own, because, like, it's a learning process, and I'm not a trained academic level journalist. Like, I'm just kind of learning as I go. So, I mean, like, John Ramirez, I really like him. I think that he's got a lot of knowledge. I think that he's got some pretty far out ideas, but don't we all? Cool guy.
Let's continue.
I liked his interview on UCR. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, like
he doesn't have a filter. You know, I mean, he backs up what he says. He'll say some really interesting things. I mean, he talked about the hybrid program. Mm-hmm. He talked about so much, and he's just an interesting guy. I'm glad he came out when he did, and it was really cool that you kind of ushered him in.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, dude. Yeah,
Unity's shaping culture out here, guys.
100%.
People need to recognize. Also, I don't know if you heard what John Ramirez has said about our favorite serial harasser back channel. Pretty wild.
What's that?
I'll have to DM you. He said some interesting things about some of these harassers, John Ramirez.
Oh, right.
After consulting his IC buddies, not just him. So pretty weird. But we're on 7 of 10, so 3 more.
Oof, but this would be crazy.
This was huge, right? When this happened.
Yeah. It was wild, dude. Like, I never expected to get this interview. Now, like, for anyone who hasn't watched it, he didn't say anything. His body language might have suggested some stuff, but he didn't say anything. But I was so sure he would, because of the way that this interview came about. I was like, God? Like, God, is that you right now? Like, this is too weird. Because, like, we found me and a friend of mine who's out there in America and has a IC background and, you know, can call and connect with some of these people. We found his number. We found a phone number for him on a public directory. And we called that number. He called that number. And it went to voicemail. So we left a message. Hey, you know, Admiral, this is blah, blah, blah. I'm calling on behalf of Jay from Project Unity. He's got a podcast, yada, yada, you know, like to talk to you, etc. I hope to hear back from you. Anyway, like maybe like 3 weeks go by. And then my buddy calls me up and he's like, you're not going to believe this, but Admiral Bobby Ray Inman just got back to me and he's happy to do an interview. And it turns out that the phone number that we used was for an old phone that he had locked away in a desk drawer for like years. Like 2 years or something, and on a whim, he just decided to check it and saw our voicemail. As was like, what? Yeah, I was because of that. I was like, the dude's gonna tell us about reverse engineering programs. Like, this is clearly like destiny right now. Obviously, it is. So I think I did a pretty good job of hiding my disappointment when he started saying that Roswell was a weather balloon and like all this stuff. But he what a crazy interview. This guy, like it says on the thumbnail, director, ONI, NSA, NEURO, which is the National Underwater Reconnaissance Office, the Science Applications International Corporation, DIA, CIA. I mean, like, this is the highest level person I have ever spoken to in my life and probably ever will. He didn't give us any critical information, but his body language was very interesting because I knew I had to be like kind of strategic with this interview. And so I wanted to kind of talk to him about his career and, you know, get him eased into the conversation, talk, because that's an amazing career. So it was genuinely interesting to hear him reflecting back on all of that stuff. But yeah, like when we got to the UFO bit, because before that he was talking, he was kind of relaxed, he was reminiscing, he was thinking, and his body posture was suggestive of someone that was just relaxed and enjoying the interview. But when we got to UFOs, when we got to Bob Exler, the former NASA mission specialist who got him on the record that time in the 1980s, basically saying that they had recovered vehicles, he was like this, and he was touching his ear, he was shaking his head, and he was very quick to say, no, absolutely no UFOs. And it's just like, you know, that transition in body language, I'm not a specialist. I did send it to some body language specialists and they never got back to me, which is a real shame because I thought that would be a really good example for some of these like YouTube channels to dig into that specialize in body language because it was such an abrupt transition. But even as just like a layman, it's like, like there's definitely some kind of like defensivity coming in here. So interesting talk, fascinating guy, incredibly scary because he's like such a high level spook. Give us anything other than a kind of a bit of a body language hint that he knows more.
The fact that he took the interview, I think, says something too, right?
Yeah. Like, I mean, maybe the Admiral will listen to this. There's a likelihood he could. So I do apologize if you felt like I'd misled you. We have talked about this in emails afterwards, but I didn't mislead him, but I maybe didn't make it obvious that I was really knowledgeable on UFOs and like that was my main interest. I was kind of like, you know, I provided a list of things that we were going to talk about prior to the interview because he requested that. So it was like, you know, national security, geopolitics, everything that's going on. Oh, and, you know, the government UAP conversations.
Really small at the bottom.
yeah. Basically, like, oh, no, maybe the Tic Tacs. Like, you know, like, it's actually, tell me about Bob Axler. He's like, oh, shit. Like, this isn't good. Like, yeah, no, to be fair, I think that he was cool with it afterwards. He was a little bit upset afterwards. We smoothed that out, and yeah, I think he took it on the chin quite well.
Oh, really? So he felt like you did a gotcha on him?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. He did respond afterwards kind of saying, I feel like you misrepresented your intentions, like, you know, with this interview. And we talked to, like, that's calmed down. Like, that's all good now. I'm pretty cool. Sure we're okay. But yeah, like, I can understand why he'd feel that way, because I didn't show that I was knowledgeable on the subject. So when it got to the UFO bit, he probably did feel like, whoa, hang on a second. Why does he know Bob Axler? Why does he know this stuff? But I knew that I couldn't. I had to tell him I wanted to talk about it, but I didn't want him to, like, know that I really wanted to drill into it, you know?
You don't want to scare him off. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I was still honest. I just wasn't as honest as I could be. Like,
and his reaction to that, I think, is telling too, right? Like,
Yeah. Oh, no, he was annoyed. He was annoyed. I think that does say something as well. Yeah. I mean, the guy knows. The guy 100%
he has
knows
to know
what the portfolio is. Whatever portfolio there is, he knows about it.
Okay.
100%.
Boom.
That's another exclusive. You know, I got the first one with that guy.
Yeah, dude. That's why, honestly, I'm sure you hear this all the time, right? Jesus, Spook, how does Jay get all these interviews? Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
So how did you get this interview?
Because I know Spooks.
Yeah, right.
Good answer.
Yeah, no, I know. I've got a couple of friends, like Patreons, people who are connected, who have the email address for certain people, and I think they had the email address for his aide. So I just reached out to his aide, Rachel, who I've now, like, you know, spoken to a number of times, and we've had me and Tim Burchett, I think we've had about 5 or 6 interviews now. We've had quite a few talks, and at one point he did invite me out to his ranch, which I've yet to take him up on, but if I actually find myself in Tennessee, he better live up to that southern hospitality. I want to go to Tim Burchett's ranch, please. But yeah, no, he's a cool guy. He's become like another big, you know, massive name in this. But it honestly is kind of nuts. Like, I have to think about this, because these days people are like, God, like, not everyone, but some people are like, Jay's like a UFO skeptic. And, like, it's like, guys, you realize I got the exclusive with Ross, the exclusive with Tim Burchett, the exclusive with Admiral Tim Gallaudet, exclusive with Admiral Bobby Ray Inman, with Oak Shannon. Like, I'm pretty obviously interested in getting this out there. I just don't trust every fucking spook. Sorry if I can't swear.
You can.
And, bro, okay, that's what I'm telling you. I love you, bro, because I resonate with that so hard. People
dude, for
telling
real.
Me that same stuff. It's like, bro, like, how many hours I've been editing all this stuff? Like,
I've got all of these people out, and Lou and Gary have blocked me, but they follow trolls. Okay. Like, you know, I'm literally going out and flying to other countries sometimes to get exclusives that no one in ufology has gotten before, and I will tap myself on the back for that, because I think I'm allowed to, and then I get blocked by these guys. It's like, okay, like, so we can't disagree on, like, even the tiniest thing. I have to be in agreement with you about everything. You know, why are you emailing me to, like, tell me to be a team player? That's weird. Why are you emailing me and literally telling me to, like, toe the line? Otherwise, you'll be blocked again. Block me. I'm not a follower.
We're going to have to press on that. Friends all
around. Yeah. Block me up, man. Do it. Because, like,
Gary Nolan emailed you this, or is it Lou?
I'm not going to say who that was.
Okay.
But, you know, like, either way, it's just kind of like, don't be coming into, like, my privates and, like, saying to me, like, you need to be a leader in the community and toe the line. If I'm a leader, I'm not going to take orders from you. That kind of contradicts
the toe the line they're talking about is, from what I've seen, just calling out some of this weird dynamics at play, some of this weird harassment, like, this weird access media stuff.
You're allowed to critically think. You should be allowed to kind of, like, say, like, hey, look, I'm totally on board for transparency in conversations, but, like, can we just address, like, this issue? It seems to be a bit of a contradiction. And then you get so much hate for it. It's like, whoa, hang on a second. Like, good research is also the stuff you don't like. Good research is also the times where you have to acknowledge, oh, that's a red flag, or that's a contradiction, or we should ask a hard question here, because we do need some clarity on that if we're going to go forward with disclosure. But there's too much of this because of a fear, I think, of moving outside of the accepted parameters, moving outside of the groupthink. Groupthink in our day and age is just like an actual pandemic. Like, it's an endemic.
It's really bad.
Real problem. It's not just ufology, but ufology is not exempt from it. So there's a lot of groupthink and kind of like herd mentality.
Well, it shows up a lot in areas where there's a lot of confusion, right? Where there's a where there's not really any solid ground. And so people instinctively want to look to authority figures, right? So it's prime for people to come in from a, even a, sometimes a self-appointed position of authority, and then to dictate how it's going, because the field is very nebulous. It's very confusing. Yeah. Not everybody has a good handle on it. And people instinctually will look up to the one loudest voice, or to the voice that they think sounds most confident, and it becomes a problem. I think that's where like a lot of introspection philosophy really help when it comes down to researching this topic. And if people find themselves, and this is just my advice, if people find themselves like waiting for the next like Lou drop, or for a book to explain it to you, or even an interview to explain it all to you, like there's so many more morsels out there for you that you can just call on whenever you want to. Open up a book, follow Jean-Luc, you know what I mean? You will see some stuff that you just never thought about before, and you'll be forced to face it on your own, which is where you are going to make the most progress.
So back to this email real quick, and we don't have to name the person. Do you know what month was it, or was it in response to something that maybe you had said publicly?
I think it was in response to something I said publicly, or it was a response email to me asking why I'd been blocked. I think that was what it was. It was a response email to me asking why I'd been blocked. It was about, you know, it was about being more of a team player, or like a showing good leadership skills is apparently listening to you. Like, okay. All right. But that might have worked on the other boys, not on this one.
Yeah, bro. I'm so glad you're in this conversation, Jay, because it's sad how many people would get that email and would be like, okay, I'm not going to talk about XYZ anymore or any of these red flags. Because that's how they get all these people to do this stuff, because it's like, you want to be part of disclosure, right? You want to help the cause, right? And it's unfortunate what people allow to transpire.
I'd be so happy to help the cause if the cause wasn't like, you know, like, do this or get blocked, do this or get harassed, do this or get doxed, do this or get attacked. Like, yo, that's not okay. Like, that's actually really not okay. And so, like, when you're associating with the kind of people that are propagating that into the space, it's like, I'm suspicious of you and your behaviors and your actions, because one hand is doing one thing, one hand's doing another thing. And, you know, what's that all about? So, yeah, I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe they're just truly trying to put good work out there, but their associations and their behaviors and their interactions over time have made me think, well, I don't really trust your objectivity at this point. I'm very concerned about the engineering of echo chambers and herd mentality and not questioning things enough. And like, you know, wanting to believe so hard that you're actually willing to really ignore big flashing red signs that say like, you should look at this and question it, because that shouldn't be antithetical to disclosure, whatever that really means. It should actually be a process. It should be part of it to cut away
a core fundamental aspect of it.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, like, I know John Greenwald does hyper focus a little bit on Lou, and I understand why people get like a bit pissed off, because like, just drop it. But at the same time, why should we just drop the main guy who's a counterintelligence officer, who's, you know, like deep in the IC, who like ran Camp Platinum at Guantanamo Bay and has had, like, let's be honest, some contradictions and some flakiness with the whole OSAP A-tip kind of nexus? Like, why can't we question that? Why is that hateful or an attack as a researcher to find data points that don't make sense and to scrutinize them? That's called being a researcher. That's like the actual job. If you're not doing that and you're angry at people that do that, you're in an ideological movement, not in a research community.
Absolutely. And a lot of people are virtue signaling online too. So they'll like take up the defense, you know, and they'll take up arms, and it's just a whole deal, dude. So these flags get raised. I think no one is above criticism or investigation, or, you know, like being held over the coals for the stuff that they promised, or the principles they say that they keep. If we're supposed to believe these people about something as complex and revolutionary, right, as the UFO topic, then we should be able to believe them down the chain, and their background and their action should all check out. And if we call that into question, we shouldn't get swarmed by a group of believers who've decided that the morsels of information that they claim to have, these people claim to have, is worth the strange behavior, gang stalking. It's not worth it. Yeah. I think this was said, I don't know by who, but I know the context. We can't lose our humanity in the search for UFOs. That's not a good trade-off.
No, I mean, like, you know, I know it's X. So some people might be a little bit liberal with what they vote on a poll, but I still found it disturbing when I put up a poll, which was like, you know, I can't remember the exact thing, but it was like, press a yellow button and you get UFO disclosure, but the baby on the train track dies. Press the red button and you might get UFO disclosure later, but you get to save the baby. And most people killed that baby, man. Most people, it was like 70% of people out of like, you know, a couple of thousand votes where it was like, yeah, man, dead that baby off. Like, that baby done. It was like, whoa, hang on a minute. Like, you could still save the child and have disclosure later, but you went for that instant gratification and the sacrifice of an innocent life. Now, I know, again, that is just a poll and you do get, you know, assholes are just like, whatever. But I found that metric quite disturbing. But it also is indicative of what we're seeing happen with this kind of echo chamber mentality and this kind of like, if you're not on board with it, you're an enemy, I'm going to attack you kind of mentality.
Enemy really of disclosure.
Yeah, it's really dangerous. Also, someone did comment below and I wanted to say, I would never smash my guitars. I'm not a guitar smashing person. I'm a guitar playing person. So no, I would never smash my guitar.
No, it's not a new age. Not yet.
It's not a golden era. Not quite yet.
Okay, two more big ones. That was great, Jay. That was beautiful. Rant. This might be one of our first clips we do from our own show on the feed. Those were some major bars. Also, some people in the chat are like, it's drama. It's so dumb if we were like, it's drama. It's like, we're talking about counter-intel dudes doing counter-intel moves on civilian researchers. That's going back to the 50s.
Like, it is dramatic, but it's not just drama. Like, it's, you know, probably worth discussing.
And the people saying it are in the community. It's not just happening. It's happening to people you know. Why turn a blind eye?
In the UFO community that's built on, like, conspiracy and, like, don't trust government intel dudes. And
Don't trust the government until now, until this one point. Bruce Fenton actually brought that up. Bruce Fenton's great. I've had him on a
friend of the show.
With Alien Scientist, that episode is really cool.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about, where he was like, you know, for so many years, it was about a real mistrust of what the government's been doing for decades. And now it's like, these are the chosen heroes. And if you don't believe in the governmental process, you're now anti-UFOlogy, anti-disclosure. And it's like, what a polar axis shift that is over the last few years, which again is indicative of the wider culture of like, one group now being very pro-institution and very pro this, and another group being like, you know, more about freedom and lack of censorship. And it's the same thing in the UFO community now. It's like, no, you have to trust these conduits in government. They're the only way that this is going to happen. It's like, dude, the government's proven time and time again. I mean, God knows why Tim Burchett's in the government. He's always yelling about it. He's just like, oh, yeah, you know,
glad he's there.
Then, you know, it's a big cover up and he just doesn't trust anything. And it's quite funny. But you know, there's a couple of good people in the government, of course. It's not all like some big enemy, but like the actual structure and the labyrinth of the USAP WUSAP world, like, this is not gonna give us the answers people are hungry for.
No. Okay, well, this one I think will be a little bit more upbeat, but that was beautiful. I'm with it, all that. You develop a friendship with this guy, right? Duncan Trussell. How did this happen? Yeah. What's it like being friends with him?
I mean, like, I wouldn't go as far as to say, like, we're friends. I'd love to call him a friend. I've been on his podcast and he's been on mine twice. So, like, you know, we're friendly and we get on really well. And that's awesome because I'm such a huge Duncan Trussell fan. I actually can't remember how we got connected. I think it was literally that I found out he was following me. And if you're following me, your DMs are open. So I was able to message him, and I think that's what it was. It was just like, dude, I'm a massive fan of Midnight Gospel and your stand-up and, you know, all your talks with Joe. And I think that was all it was. Yeah, I have to pinch myself because I am followed by Duncan Trussell and Joe Rogan. And I'm just like, whoa. Like, I find that really quite strange and a bit of an honor and a privilege, to be honest. But
Joe Rogan is my DMs.
Awesome. I'm not trying to blow up Joe Rogan's DMs. I think I messaged him twice and he never responded. So I was like, oh, okay, I'll just ask. So maybe one day, Joe. But yeah, no, Duncan is an awesome guy. He's hilarious. He's a great mind. He's got a shamanistic spiritual intuition. He's also very smart and, you know, pays attention to the world and just makes you laugh, man. Like, I was just cracking up throughout that talk. Same as on his podcast. Not much to say other than got a lot of love for the guy.
It's cool. I love seeing just this the ways that this subject breaches more and more into the mainstream, right? For through sure. People like Duncan Trussell. There's someone else recently I was like, oh, this is interesting. Demi Lovato even, right?
Yeah.
It's interesting. And that's the thing, right? People will scoff at Demi Lovato, but it's like, no one owns UFOs, guys. Exactly. None of us do. Not Lou, not anyone on this stage. You know what I mean? So everyone is going to have an opinion on this. Everyone is going to be affected by this. Like, you can't really gatekeep something like this.
No, for sure. For sure.
Okay, and then this last one. This was the one you did yesterday. This was sick.
Yeah. How did, big. This is
how
big,
did you get
dude.
This? This was huge, bro. This is like, this was one of the more historical, like, historical moments, I feel like, on your channel. Because it's like a non-UFO thing.
Yeah,
how did this
like
happen?
A non-UFO thing. Like, I've been wanting to... I'm sure people can assume based on this conversation and some of the things I've said, like I've wanted to kind of expand my interest. I'm not just a UFO guy. I was never really a UFO guy. I just happened to see things that were flying in the sky and they're unknown. So they're by definition UFOs. And here I am. So like, you know, I kind of ran into it, but that's not my only interest. And I love talking to people about all sorts of different topics. And again, like, it's funny, like you were saying before about people thinking that I'm like a spook, like how is he connected? How does he get this interview? How does he do this? And I've seen it. Like I've seen people thinking I'm in like the MOD or something. Like, never underestimate an email. Like literally, like just send an email if they've got an email address. This guy just happened to have his DMs open. Any of you could have messaged him. Like his DMs were just open. So I just went on Twitter, messaged him, and he got back to me. Simple as. Like he literally was just like, yeah, dude, that's cool. I'm down for that. And I was like, oh my God, like, okay, awesome. So that's like it. There's no big story to it. I don't know Elon Musk, wish I did, but it's literally just a case of messaging someone and they said, yeah. And we had a great talk. This guy's, I mean, like you said, it's history in the making. Got a pretty low reception from my audience, but I think that's because a lot of people are worried about like the kind of transhumanism element and the dystopian element to these things. Which I can understand, but I think you should really just like, you know, listen to this guy's story and, you know, he's a brave young man. His incident happened like 10 years ago and he doesn't look that old. I didn't actually ask him how old he is, but I have to assume that he was probably in his, you know, early 20s when he broke his spinal cord. And he's a quadriplegic, you know, he's got no use of his limbs. This has given him the ability to do things that, you know, his autonomy has been returned to him to a pretty significant degree. So I think that it's worth appreciation, worth listening to his story and hearing what he has to say. And he's an example of a pretty incredible future, whether it's good or bad, coming down the line. This guy has a computer in his brain that controls his, you know, ability to interface through the mind. I mean, that's just incredible.
Yeah, and for the chat and anyone watching, this is Nolan Arbaugh, the first Neuralink recipient. And yeah, dude, your interview was really, really interesting and good on him for having a positive outlook and attitude.
Oh, my God.
It was sad when he was like, I have so much time with my thoughts because, like, I don't want to bother anyone. So, like, yeah. Even if I needed something, like, 5 minutes later, it's like, I'll just wait, like, a few hours
well,
to
would,
ask.
Wouldn't you? Like, you would feel guilty if you were like, you know, Mom, can I have this? Then, like, 2 minutes later, you needed something else. You don't really want to call Mom again. Like, I get that. Like, that's, that, you know, but he's, yeah, like, incredibly brave and... like amazingly positive outlook and also just yeah an example of the future.
Hell yeah.
No, it was a very good interview too, and it's super important. Like you said, the transhumanism thing everyone is freaked out about, but it's stuff like this that solves that mystery that reveal, you know, it defogs it, so we can kind of see
Sorry to interrupt. He's a spiritual guy. Like, he's not like, you know, like tech, transhuman. He's a really spiritual guy. So,
yeah, he said that like his faith in God is what got him through a lot of this stuff.
For sure.
I will say, though, Elon Musk having the Baphomet armor, and honestly, Elon Musk, I feel like, has some kind of occulty connections like they all do up there. It is interesting. There's something to keep your eye on, right? I think this guy probably seems like a solid stand up dude, but. I don't know,
this
man.
This is the thing with Elon, right? Like, people are like, is he controlled opposition? Because he's so kind of like, you know, anti-globalist. And then he's kind of doing stuff that kind of seems like it's in alignment with globalists. And, you know, like, what's his true motive? Is he a Tony Stark character or is he part of a bigger agenda that we don't know about? But, you know, like the Baphomet stuff, like, I think the thing with Elon as well is he's very plugged into meme culture. Like, we know that, right? So he knows how to kind of get people talking about things. And I would actually be really surprised to find out that Elon Musk was part of like occult workings and like occult groups and like that kind of stuff. Like, I don't think he is, but maybe I don't know. But it,
what about Pistolka, who you, I think you've talked to, right? I should have put her on the thing too. But yeah. She tweeted out that Tyler guy was Elon's Space Force UFO advisor
handler.
Deleted
Space
it.
Space Force handler.
Or handler. Oh yeah, that's
right,
a different word.
Right. Right.
You think he's plugged into UFO stuff?
No, I don't know if he is. Like, I've just like anyone else observing the space, really, because I have no direct line to Elon whatsoever. Like, I just have to imagine that he's either, I have to say, and I think this could be the case, actually. I think he's just a bit closed off to it. He might have special knowledge, but I kind of feel like a bit like Obama, he would start inferring it, because Obama's inferred that he knows stuff like a number of times. So even though he can't explicitly tell you what he knows because it's clearly classified and under an NDA of some form as a president, he's been hinting a number of times in talk shows. So I kind of feel like Elon's a similar guy, right? He likes to test the waters. I feel like he'd be like, well, you know, I wish I could tell you, but I'd have to kill you or something like that, right? Like, so I kind of get this dismissive attitude that he has to it. This, oh, I've got 6,000, 9,000 Starlink and we would have seen it, blah, blah, blah. I remember hearing him say something about consciousness and it struck me, and I kind of wish I'd brought it up with Noland, but I didn't want to like badmouth Elon Musk on his own interview because I'm kind of hoping for a repost. So, you know, if I'm being perfectly honest. But he did have an interview, I think it was with Lex Fridman, where he was talking about consciousness and non-local and local, like receiver versus generator. And he was like, well, you know, if you damage the brain, you damage consciousness. So the brain is generated by consciousness. And I was like, that's a really simplistic way of looking at it. You get a radio, you damage the radio, and it no longer plays music. Does that mean the music was inside the radio? No, the radio is receiving the music. You've just damaged the receiver. So that whole concept of like, you know, you damage the brain, you damage consciousness, therefore it's generated. It's like that doesn't actually make sense. It doesn't actually contradict the non-local receiver models, which made me go, you know, he's not as smart as he might think he is on certain things. On other things, he's brilliant. But the consciousness question, that was clearly something that's not his forte. Aliens and UFOs, I think it's not his forte. And he dismisses it. I think he just dismisses it.
Yeah, totally agree. Question for our lovely mod, Heather Broody. She says, after having this interview, if Neuralink goes public, would you consider getting the implant, Jay?
Hell no.
Good answer.
No. I will get carbon fiber tendons and limbs so I can run up walls. I'll do all that kind of stuff. You know, I'll get the augmentations that make my physical body a little bit faster and quicker when I'm getting older. But you leave my neocortex alone, man.
Yes.
Stay away from that spinal cord. I don't want that. I mean, like, the thing is, like, for someone like this, again, he's a quadriplegic. His life is drastically different. You know, we can't relate to that unless you are a quadriplegic who happens to be listening to this. Like, we can't relate. So it's not like, you know, oh, like, line up and get your Neuralink. It's like, no, this is for paralysis, for, you know, quadriplegics, for disabilities, for Alzheimer's, for dementia. You know, like, I've got people in my family who are suffering from things like this. And if there could be a way for something to be in the brain that can stop the, you know, degeneration of the hippocampus and things like this, it's like, that to me is a revolution in medical science, in biomedicine and biotechnology. So, you know, it's got scary connotations for like a worldwide rollout. And I'd be so against that. I'd be first in line to, like, you know, be fighting against the mandatory integrated chip, anything mandatory. I didn't take the last mandatory thing. So, yeah, you know, I'm telling you now, that it's not in my blood to do that. So yeah, like, I'd get upgrades that make me better, faster, stronger, but yeah, leave my consciousness alone, you know. But respect for him for doing
good
it, for being brave enough to be the Mark One, for being brave enough to be patient zero on a Neuralink, that's no small feat. And because it's, you know, changed his life for the better. So good for him.
Jay, where do you see it going? Do you think that they'll ever, two questions for you. Do you think that there'll ever be a technology that you just wear that reads the electromagnetic pulses and sends them back in as opposed to the chip? Will the first Neuralink patient be like, not a prototype for it, but a chance for us to learn more about the brain? And what are your thoughts on voice-to-skull technology?
I'm guessing John probably talked about that because he's all about his voice to skull technology.
We had a little chat.
He actually went all in. Yeah. He went all in yesterday on our show.
Of course he did. Yeah.
Saying Elizondo's voice and everything publicly. Yeah.
Oh, I love John so much. Honestly, you have no idea how much I love that guy and John Luke. Those guys like my boys. So yeah, sorry. What do I think about? Oh, sorry, Tipa. What
was it? No, we'll go backwards. Voice to school tech. Do you, have you thought about that at all?
And yeah, I mean, like, you know, that's something that's been studied, and it's, you know, completely reasonable to imagine that that's possible in quite advanced ways these days. So yeah, I mean, I don't know enough about it. It's not something that I've dived into in a research way. I think most of my information has probably come from people like John. But the receipts are there for the R&D and the studies over time. And, you know, it's a bit like things like, you know, the heart attack gun that the CIA created, or some of these things that can penetrate through walls and hear your voice. You know, this is the 50s and 60s and 70s, guys. So, like, you know, it's 2024. What do you think they got? Like, they obviously got really advanced stuff. So, yeah, voice to skull scares me. Like, that does scare me, the idea that you could just have, like, you know, basically create schizophrenia in someone by just bombarding them with noise. Yeah, not much to say other than I believe it's real. In fact, it's just, like, logical that it's real, and it's most likely.
With that technology out, it almost seems like they can already do interactions with the brain without the use of a chip. Robert Duncan, he's specialized in this research of what the government can do to the brain. And he said that the Neuralink and Elon Musk might be used as a patsy to kind of launder the damage that's been done and the reality of what other people have been endured in terms of suffering from could be targeted individuals, right? Do you see that as a potential at all? Or
man, I'm open to all sorts of things when it's something that I don't truly understand and have knowledge on. So, like, yeah, sure, you know, yeah.
Wild times, man.
What was the other? There was another question you asked, but I can't remember what it was.
You know, could this guy be used, or could this first round of Neuralink not represent like the standard? Like, we're all going to be able to get implant, but more technology. No.
So we already have like the haptic feeders, like you've already got wearable bands that can read your brainwave function. I mean, there was quite a controversial Davos presentation. I can't remember the name of it, but if you type in Davos 2024 brain frequency reading or something like along these lines, they did a pretty extensive presentation on how this technology is already available to monitor your employees' brainwave functions. And like, they had a whole scenario that they put out in this Davos presentation where they were talking about it, not warning, but kind of pitching to this, you know, room of elites, like, we now have the technology to be able to monitor brainwave function. And they gave like a scenario of being in an office and you sit back and your like haptic reader starts playing your favorite music because it knows what you want. But then there's like a situation that they play out in this like scenario, which is really scary, where someone is being investigated for like fraud in the company, and everyone in the company is requested to, they have to have a brainwave audit. So because they're wearing these things all day in the office, their brainwave functions are being recorded onto an external software that's, you know, then able to be. I worked in a call center once, and I know what it's like when they bring up the recorded phone calls you've had throughout the month, and like, what did you do wrong here, et cetera, et cetera. Now imagine that with your brainwave function. And so they had this idea of like an audit where everyone had to have their brainwaves audited, and any brainwaves that were in synchronization with this guy's brainwaves, they were then investigated. So that's a terrifying dystopian future that's now, because it might not be rolled out, but the technology exists. So like this whole thing of, you know, integrated intrusive surveillance style biotech, I think it's a lot more likely that they will make it wearable, because the idea of a Neuralink is terrifying for the average person. Like, no one's going to be like me, and most people won't be like, yeah, drill a hole in my skull and put threads into my brain. Like, you know, that's not what most people want. But a wearable band, you know, Google Glass, and we're already doing that. So like, yeah, man, it's you know, like biotech and tracking through that type of biotech is coming. It's gonna happen. It's already happening. It's just gonna happen in more intense ways as we go through the years.
Weird times, man. Strange days.
The Confucius curse is truly upon us.
I have another question real quick, and then I don't know, Tuba, maybe probably want to close out soon.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's getting late for you, Jay. I'm just kidding. This is some relevant news. What did you think of this, Jay? This Lou Elizondo statement that went out this week where he's like, I will just read it for everyone. To add insult to injury, I was notified yesterday that there may be a personal threat against myself and several other whistleblowers formerly associated with the UAP effort for the U.S. government. As such, I would like to make this perfectly clear to the American people. I am not prone to accidents. I am not suicidal. I am not abusing drugs. I am not engaged in any illicit activities. If something happens to me or my family members in the future, you will know what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, the guy's got a lot of enemies, like Al-Qaeda and cartels. And, you know, like, maybe there's, like, some truth to the, you know, wanting to be on a hit list. But in terms of the UFO stuff, I don't really see why. I mean, like, so, you know, David Grush was in a congressional setting under oath. But Liu's never been in a congressional setting under oath. And I kind of feel like if he was the one, if he, you know, if he's the one with the life-threatening information, like, why is he not blown a whistle? Why is he not, you know, been in a congressional setting and talking about what his exposure was over the years? And
he's been on Matt Ford's show, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's right. That's the national hearing. That's the new conduit. I don't know. Maybe it's because I don't know why it's seems to be that you know, they want pretty complacent hosts who aren't going to challenge them too much. I mean, like I've never put myself out there as a Liu hater. I'm suspicious of counterintelligence officers because their remit is to counterintelligence. Duh. Like, come on, use your brain. So, you know, that kind of is a bit of a red flag from the get-go. I mean, like, you know, for so many years, people have said that Richard Doty is basically persona non grata because of that. But Liu gets a pass for some reason. So, like, yeah, like, that to me is a bit weird. And I think that, you know, it's just another claim, right? Just another claim. Yeah. I wouldn't want anything. I wish no ill will to Liu Elizondo whatsoever as a human being. And I would hope that that's not actually true. But yeah, it's a statement. It's a statement that's been made, and it's just like any other statement that keeps getting made over the years. And I just think that, you know, it's got to a point now where you need to actually deliver on some of this information. I mean, my goodness, if it's so life-threatening, let's get it out there, right? Let's get it public. Let's get people understanding.
Exactly.
And that way you're more protected. I would imagine you're more protected. Like, sunlight's a good disinfectant, so let's just kind of get it out there. Yeah, I really don't know, guys. Like, I didn't, the thing is, right, and maybe we can finish up here, but like, I didn't want to arrive at this position. I don't think any of us wanted to. I haven't got an agenda. I have no debunking agenda whatsoever. I got Mick West on recently to try and convince him in some way, in some desperate way, like maybe I can get him just a little bit more onto our side, because I am still part of that whole, let's talk about this, let's recognize that it's real. But I'm sorry, there have been suspicious, weird activity from people who have had government careers in subverting truth. That's like the remit of a counterintelligence officer. So, like, yeah, forgive me for not tripping over myself to believe him at every minute of every day. I don't trust a lot of these guys who are coming out of the IC. I interact with a lot of people in the IC, and I don't necessarily know who's telling me the truth on anything. So I'm very agnostic until I can get like a real hardcore kind of confirmation. Like I said, I have made plenty of mistakes and I probably will make mistakes in the future, but it's just, for me, I have to take a step back from the 2017 glamour, like the TTSA kind of thing. And then it all fell apart, and then they took materials and they gave it to the US Army and that never went anywhere. And then they kind of, you know, like, sold this multi-pronged scientific effort that just collapsed into book deals and History Channel shows. And it's like, I understand some people, it's very exciting to see all of that happening. And it was for a minute for me. But when I look back on it now, I kind of feel like this just doesn't feel like an actual disclosure process so much as a group of people that kind of just want to push something out there. And now it's metastasized to a point where it's very clear engineering of echo chambers. It wasn't like that early on.
Damn.
There was a lot of questioning and a lot of ability to kind of move around the table. Now the positions are very tightly fixed. And I feel like if you move outside of that even an inch, you know, there's a lot of people out there that take a great amount of insult to that. And that's what worries me, is this gradual and now very clear development of these echo chambers. Like I said, I've always been quite anti-authoritarian. I've always been like, I'm not very good at being told what to do. And when it comes to this, I feel like people are continuously trying to tell me what to do and what to think and how to believe. And I'm just not really on board for that. I want to pursue these subjects and other subjects through the vein of my own curiosity, and not be kind of channeled into a narrative or a status quo that has to be adhered to. Not much.
What advice would you give Project Unity to Matt Ford, who's really new into the topic, I think like about a year? He's very much tuned in and tied in. He probably got that same email you did and was like, I'll be a team leader, I'll do whatever you want. And he's probably in the early stages of his like ufology career. It's all exciting. What advice would you give him interacting with people and like putting out?
I don't know, man. Just like, you know, my advice to Matt Ford would be my advice to anyone in this subject. You know, just keep your own counsel and don't be too quick to, you know, jump on something that hasn't got a lot of validation to it. Again, I'm not saying I'm innocent of that, because I'm not. I'm guilty of doing the same thing, of getting excited and putting something out there. But just keep your own counsel and just like maintain the understanding that if this really is real and this has been going on for decades in a level of secrecy that is almost really hard to comprehend, if it's so multifaceted, so multi-generational, so deeply layered into, you know, the darkest elements of the architecture of black budget and private aerospace, if people have been killed, if people have been assassinated for this, like, why would you think the truth is just being told to you by these people? Like, that's the thing. It's like, why would you just completely be like, cool, Lou said this, that's the way it is? It's like, I need more than that. I need more than just your words on paper or on a podcast at this point. And I think that that's a really safe place to be, because, you know, it's not about thinking that these guys are just enemies and hating on them. Not at all. But like, step back from your idolization of these people. Like, honestly, like, never meet your heroes. It's always like that kind of thing, right? It's like, they look great until you get a little closer and you realize they're just human beings who are fallible and have bad days. And I mean, my God, like I said the other day, in these email chains that I'm actually trying to get rid of, like, Jack Sodfarty, please just remove me from these blood email chains. I don't want to be on them. People are saying like, oh yeah, sure, you're on with these email chains of speakers. Like, yeah, I am. And they're really annoying. Like I don't actually want to be on there, because they're just like, you know, bitch and moan about each other all the time. Yeah. And Ron Pandolfi saying that Lou's got weight problems and that's why his life's being threatened. It's like, all this stuff is just like, this is you want to know the inner secret, guys? You want to be in on the inner circle? That's what they sound like.
Yeah.
Bitching and moaning and yelling, I'm right, you're right, I'm wrong, you're wrong, you're a disinformation agent, they're full of shit. And it's like, this is the structure? This is the disclosure thing? Like, these people... And so when you get a closer look into the window of it, you start realizing that it's actually just a bunch of people that have different ideas, a bit like the UFO community itself. They just happen to be in the IC. Some of them are pushing like one type of narrative. Some are pushing others. Like, you know, Ron Pandolfi disagrees with Lou and Lou disagrees with Pandolfi. And, you know, it's just a big old clusterfuck.
Seems like it. And we've seen some screenshots and little windows into that email chain. It was wild, and I did not expect it. I mean, it is the comments and the threads.
Right, I log into my email. I swear to God, I go on Proton Mail like almost every day, and it's just like 20 emails, like every fucking day of just like different threads of these guys. To be fair, and like I say, like, oh, kick me off. I'll probably be annoyed if they do, but at the same time, I've saved a lot of the emails. He CCs in some of the craziest people, like .mil, .gov, .navy. I'm like looking at the directory like,
oh my God,
that's a good guest.
Right?
I email that person. I actually messaged Ron Pandolfi like, hey, you want to come on Project Unity? You're like the boogeyman of ufology. Let's get you on.
That would be sick.
You're going to like eat their children at night. Let's find out.
Yeah.
And he never got back to me. And he probably won't now that I've publicly outed his comments about Lou. But I at this point I'm kind of beyond caring. Like an earlier point in like doing this, I probably would have been like, oh my God, like I'm on this chain. Now I'm like, dude, these guys are like just insulting each other with ad hominem attacks. Like, they're not as mature as you think, they're not even as smart as you think, and this is what they look like, you know, behind closed doors. So yeah, I mean, it's
humanizes them.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, Jay, that's what you've been doing, not only with your show, your focus, but with the guests you get on, the kinds of questions you ask. You've really, like, opened up a lot of doors and windows for just people who are into the research in the background. I mean, you've broken a lot of stories by having these first guests on. And I just got to say thanks, man. Like, it's been a crazy couple years. You've been there the whole time putting this content out. And I've even clipped it. You know what I mean? And been able to make other things and come to terms with certain ideas and concepts through it. So, I mean, big inspiration, bro.
I appreciate it, man. And I appreciate you guys. You know that. Like, I talk to you guys a lot. And I appreciate what you're doing in the space. And I know you get a lot of hate. But you get a lot of hate from the people that I don't really give a fuck about. So, sure. In my opinion, it's like, you know, good on you. Just keep
it's good to be hated by them.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. Like, you know, in all honesty, it's an old adage, but I think it's true. Like, you're doing something right when these people are really getting irksome about what you're saying and, you know, like trying to come at you. So, no, I appreciate what you guys are doing. And like I said, I'm fascinated by this topic. I'm a legitimate experiencer. I really have seen something. Wouldn't say that I know what it is, but it is beyond our ability to currently comprehend. And that fascinates me. You know, it opens up so many corridors, especially because there was that consciousness connection. It speaks to a fundamental principle and a fundamental mechanic in nature that we're connected to intrinsically. And that to me is way more important than kind of like, you know, spooks and counter intel and, you know, congressional hearings, because that may get people in the public a little bit more interested, but not educated. It's not going to educate them. It'll just maybe interest them. But the real information, the core secrets, I think that's stuff that we're going to find out through consciousness development, through technology evolving, through think tanks getting established, through citizens getting more awake, and other things that are happening, I'm not going to even use that word because I can't remember it. At 11 o'clock at night, I'm a bit tired. I've been in the sun all day. I've been in the sun all day. But like, you know, all of these different things, correlational, that's what I was trying to say, like correlational to each other. So be optimistic, even though I'm having a bit of a moan about like, oh, you know, these spooks and these counter-tell. And it's like, you know, it's a good thing to be suspicious of these people, but don't let it completely destroy your interest in this subject. Like I've seen, like you guys were saying before, people have done full 180s and it's just like, nah, done, like forget it, this is all a nonsense thing. It's like, no, it's not. There's obviously something so important that a lot of nonsense has to be generated around it by different influential parties, including the IC. And you know, you've got to be really wary of that whilst maintaining interest. Don't let it kill off the interest, you know. That's what my message would be. Don't let it completely defeat you just because you feel like after a few years you've looked back on this and gone, actually, like, this doesn't feel like what it was in 2017. No, it's not, but the phenomenon's real.
Exactly. And again, that's why I appreciate you so much, Jay, because I'm with the history stuff too. It's like Green Street and Lou Reviews, it's like they got into it like us, 2017 crowd, but you could tell for them ufology is really focused around that. And there's just so much more to ufology than this group of counterintelligence.
So much more. Yeah, it goes a lot further than just UFOX. And I think I even need to remind myself of that at times, you know what I mean?
It goes into human origins, ideas, muses, you know what I mean? History, future.
Like, just everything, man.
Yes, yes. It's definitely on the cusp of something big, man. And it's cool to be here in this moment.
Yeah, you're saying it's going to be a big year, Tupa.
Oh, it's going to be a big year. No, we're on the cusp of something big. You know what I mean? And I feel like it's a change. Dude, we got to get you and Jean-Luc and John Majerowski on the same episode sometime, because we got to dive into this Helena Blavatsky stuff and like
Jean-Luc's the guy for that.
I want to go with Jean-Luc deep dive on Scientology, and there's a few ex-Scientologist YouTubers. I want one of them on, and
he'll talk your ear off. Honestly, he's one of the most interesting guys. And like another quick like synchronicity is like I met him on Twitter, like through the Jean-Luc handle and everything, chatting to him and talking to him, and then like about a year into like talking online, find out he's like 3 miles down the road.
So no way.
That's
how close miles? You got.
Wow. Yeah, literally just a few miles down there. Like, he comes and hangs out with me all the time, so it's like such a cool thing. And you know, every time I meet up with that dude, he's like, hey, did you know this thing about like L. Ron Hubbard? I'm like, no. So you need to get him on. He's great.
Definitely Yeah. Well, all right then. Thank you, Jay, bro. This is awesome. I'll see you in contact in the desert, dude.
Yeah.
Tupa, this is fun, right?
It's not even that far away now, man. Like 10 days, and we'll be up.
Yeah.
It's creeping up. Guys, my camera just overheated. Great timing. great timing. But yeah, Jay, this has been an amazing show. Good shit. I cannot wait to chat until next time, dude. Like, it's going to be a live one. If we see it, contact it. If I make it down there, I'm definitely going to be in the mix. I know Red's going. It's going to be awesome.
UFO intros in the chat is going there. bunch awesome. Of people around.
Yeah, so, I'm nervous, man. I'm like, an hour and a half is no joke on stage, but I'm gonna try my best.
Oh yeah, dude.
You got this.
I can talk for quite a while, so we'll see, man. We'll see.
It's like stand up or something. Like, you got to really read the room and like play the room, like, right? Well,
real quick before we like sign off, like, they give you like a list of things that you might want, like, you know, in terms of like, you know, do you want a chair? Do you want a podium? Do you want this? And like
green M&Ms.
I went for a bar stool. I've gone for the Dave Chappelle kind of like.
Oh, really? Okay.
Talk to people with their headset. Microphone, so like, you know, I was like, you know, maybe I'll crack a couple of jokes. Yeah,
just light up a cigarette the whole time.
Yeah,
like you own the place,
right? Let me tell you about TTSA.
Yes.
Like, you know, like,
yes.
Nice.
It's been a long couple of years. No, guys, it's been great, and it'd be great to see both of you. Red, looking forward to seeing you in Cali too. But it would be awesome to see you, and if not, you know, we'll hang out at some point in the real life.
Absolutely,
yeah,
absolutely.
Man. Gotta have each other's back in this field, this crazy field.
Absolutely, brother.
Well, Jay, thank you. Until next time, everybody, this has been Skyfire News Live. Ooh. This is one of my favorite interviews so far. We got to get you back on, man.
For real. Anytime.
Bye, everyone.
Love you guys.
Thank
Take
you.
Care.
Peace.
Peace.
All right, everybody. We will see you tomorrow. Same time, Monday, 6 p.m. We'll be there with the UFO news. We got all kinds of stuff coming out. If you don't follow Skyfire on Twitter, you're missing out. If you guys haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel, you're missing out. We got content coming out of here all the time. Our music drops all the time. And as you know, we'd be clipping almost everything important to the content and to the topic. So thanks for being here. Till next time, everybody. Peace.
Skyfire News, the best UFO show on the internet. Skyfire News is on the internet. Skyfire News.
Skyfire.
Fire. Internet. Skyfire News is on the internet. I'm the phone on TV, Mom.